It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Jeff's here. Stacy's here. We're all back together again. We're going to talk about Google I.O., what to expect, Google's undersea cable network, and why Facebook asked you for your email password when you first joined. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 505, recorded Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. Laundry folding as a service. This Week in Google is brought to you by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful, modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy Visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest from Google. And man, the gang is back. I'm so happy to welcome Stacy Higginbotham back to our microphones. We missed you. She's in her temporary location.
That's right.
Undisclosed.
Temporary for a month.
Temporary.
Undisclosed.
For a month. But still in Austin? Okay.
Yes.
So the breakfast tacos are still on.
They're breakfast tacos. I
eat them while you can.
You really should be stocking up right now.
Oh, I am. Believe me. It's enchiladas, breakfast tacos, and brisket.
Ooh, and queso.
Yes, my arteries will not thank me.
You could probably bring all of this to Seattle, and the Seattleans would be so grateful that you introduced food.
I have really
food.
Thought about this.
Yeah.
But then I'd have to quit my actual tech job. I'd have to just become a restaurateur.
Yeah, we don't want you to do that.
Is it worth it?
Nope. And it's purely selfish on my part. Seattle's begging for Stacy's place. Also here, Jeff Jarvis. He is, of course, the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Nomark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, blogger at BuzzMachine.com, author of many wonderful books, like What Would Google Do? Welcome again, Jeff.
Thank you.
Former
good,
TV
good
critic.
To have the gang together.
Yeah. This is the way it's supposed to be. It's been fun, but this is the way it's supposed to be. Let's start with undersea cables, just to make sure Stacy comes back. We can't.
I think I.O., but okay, undersea cables.
Yeah. No. I want you to be happy, Stacy. Stacy has a thing for undersea cables.
Only because I can do my Sebastian the Crab impression. No, I will not sing.
First of all, I should probably ask you, what is it about undersea cables you like so much?
Because it's how you get the internet around the world. Because anything backhaul is inherently like necessary and not sexy to anyone. So I, of course, love it. That's like the technology I love.
It's infrastructure. You love infrastructure. Getting down into the nitty gritty. So
into the weeds or the photons.
I'm not sure I'm thrilled about the idea of Google or any company like Google. Facebook would be in there having so much influence on the infrastructure. But I guess, you know.
Like you love your phone company?
Yeah, it's like Sprint, you know, or
yeah, they started doing this back in like 2008 or maybe even earlier because it was all part of their, I mean, again, what is their business? Is delivering bits at the lowest possible cost.
Right.
Why give money to telcos who hated them?
Yeah, no.
Still hate them.
And Jeff makes a great point. I'd rather Google did it than a telco, which is what I guess who normally builds these. So this is an image from your favorite place, Telegeography, submarinecablemap.com. This is the Curie cable, a 10,000-kilometer cable that goes from Los Angeles to Valparaiso, which is just northwest of Chile's capital, Santiago. And it is fully Google-owned.
Which is unique. These are very expensive to build, and this is the first one that Google's ever built. It has invested in several others, along with other telcos, Facebook, and other companies. So that's the first unique thing about Curie.
And then it's doing Unity, which goes from Japan to Redondo Beach.
No, it already did Unity.
Oh, that's the old one. So the new one is Curie.
Unity was a while back.
2010. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The Southeast Asia Japan cable, which was 2013. But these are not all Google owned, I guess.
Those are the ones that Google shared. Is part ownership.
Yeah. And just to give you an idea of who puts these cables in, it's owned by Google, but also Globe Telecom, KDDI, Telecom in Indonesia, Singapore's Telecom, Singtel, China Telecom, China Mobile, TOT, Chunghwa Cable, and Brunei International Gateway. So that's the Southeast Asia cable. Faster, which went into service a few years ago from Oregon to Taiwan, co-owned by a bunch of Asian telecoms, of course. And Time.com. That's not Time Magazine, is it?
No. That's dead. Well, it's not dead. Time is now.
They actually had a great conference. This Time 100 conference had everybody. This is the new D conference, isn't it?
Is it?
Really?
Well, yeah. I was amazed at the people who were at this Time 100 conference.
Because they give them an award. They give them an award.
And they're also trying to appear human to the rest of the world.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, but you know they are humans.
They want to hobnob with people outside the tech companies and make themselves more approachable for people to counter some of the backlash.
Well, it worked for me because Tim Cook, who spoke at it, said some things I really liked, and it did humanize him. He said and revealed, I think for the first time, I didn't know this, that Google, for instance, gives no money to candidates, unlike any other tech company. Apple, I should say, not Google. Apple gives no money to tech candidates. Apple does not have a PAC or is not a member of a PAC, a political action committee, because Tim Cook says that would be wrong. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's also because they're Apple. People come to the temple of Apple.
They don't have to.
Right, they don't have to.
He also called for the regulation of the tech industry. In fact, I really liked what he said about that. He said, let me see if I can find the quote. I'm a deeply free market person in mindset. I believe that some unexpected things can happen in regulation. I think that we all have to be intellectually honest, and we have to admit that what we're doing isn't working, and that technology needs to be regulated. I don't disagree with that, and I think that that's fairly honest. That's not... So other technology CEOs say that because it's inevitable, and so we better call for it. And if we do, maybe we can control it. I don't feel like Tim Cook's doing that. There are too many examples where no rails have resulted in great damage to society. I've been on the regulation kick.
He's also looking for rails for his competitors.
Yeah.
I can attribute cynicism. You could be right about both things.
Yeah, but I do believe that... Apple has stood up and said privacy is important, and they fought the FBI. Actually, had something interesting to say about that. The FBI San Bernardino case, where the FBI went to Apple and said, "Please decrypt this guy, the shooter's cell phone," and Apple said, "No." Tim says, "I wish that case would have gone to court. To be honest, it was dropped the day before, and now after the Inspector General reports have come out, our worst fears have been confirmed that it was a very rigged case to begin with." And so I think this was not the government's finest hour. I have personally...
Oh, was it a rigged case? I don't know that.
I don't either. I'm going to have to look at the Inspector General's report, but it sounds like what he's saying and what we kind of thought at the time was that this was a cherry-picked case. They didn't really need this information, but they thought
that's
that
true.
This was their best shot at getting a judgment that would allow them to decrypt phones in the future.
Yes, they wanted a high-profile thing that people would not get cranky about.
Right.
So you could say, they're invading our privacy. And then they're like, but terrorists.
It's a terrorist.
And they're like, okay.
Yeah. So I thought that was good. And by the way, that was all at this Time 100 summit. So who owns Time if they don't exist?
No. Time Inc. doesn't exist. No, Benioff owns Time Magazine.
Mark Benioff. Okay.
But you were asking in the context of who would own a...
A
cable.
It was a long, deep rat hole we went down.
Yes, it was. But it was your rat holes. Yours.
It's still a tech rat hole because Benioff. So, boom. Although, Time.com is Time Magazine, so I don't know.
I'm confused. I was not impressed with the 100. because
lists are such BS.
They are, yeah, as you know, and Jeff's
been, what this is for.
Jeff's been in these rooms, I'm sure, when these lists have been created. It's really a great way to publicize a magazine to get attention.
I've been in the room when these are decided.
Oh, you have too?
I used to work at Fortune. They make lists.
Yeah.
I mean, used to make lists at GigaOM.
Some of these people are important. Some of them are celebrities. Jared Kushner was one of them. No doubt he's important. Nancy Pelosi, also important. But some of them may be less.
Some of these are advertisers.
Yeah. Tyra Banks, really?
Shut your mouth.
Sasha Nadella is in there, the CEO of Microsoft. Melinda Gates, Bill's wife, who's been very influential. Kanye. anyway, it's an interesting list. You're right. These things are really about promotional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're also just kind of, New York Magazine made lists, Lingua Franca magazines.
Oh, really? Was that who started that?
New York really did.
Yeah.
When it was part of the Herex, Herald Tribune, I mean.
Yeah.
And then, so I was in the room at People when they had we had a cover on Mel Gibson. And my mentor, the editor, Pat Ryan, was just struggling to have any damned cover billing to say. What do you say about Mel Gibson at the time? Now there's plenty to say, but then there wasn't much to say. And she finally just out of nowhere kind of said, oh, let's call him the sexiest man alive.
Oh, and that started that.
Became a franchise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it
wow.
Was, but it was just trying to fill in a cover billing. It was, ugh.
All right.
Wow. Here.
I was there
I love
then.
Those covers.
What do you say about Mel Gibson? He's the sexiest
now you say
man
the
alive.
Meanest anti-Semitic drunk, but that's another matter.
Here's another one for you, Stacey, because we missed you so much.
Oh.
Jacquard.
Oh, yes. I didn't see the TED Talk, but I was about to.
I don't think it's up yet.
This. Oh, okay, good.
It will be, though, a TED Talk which demonstrates this Jacquard technology, which is a wearable technology.
Which was announced 4 years ago.
A long time ago.
I just want to point that out.
Ivan Puperev, who is at ATP, Google's Advanced Technology and Projects Division, showed off his Levi jacket, the Jacquard jacket. And this is an interesting graphic involving vegetables, shoes, laptops, I'm not sure. A day in the life of Gemma. Everything we touch. Oh, I get it. It's an image of everything she touched during the day. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Oh, she's got the tray of Indian spices. I bet her cooking is delicious.
I bet, looking at this, because a pogo stick, a skateboard, a hairdryer, I bet she's a kid. But this was all the stuff she ate. I don't know.
Oh. Ate or made? I mean, if you touched it.
Do you think she's a chef? I don't know.
You don't need to be a chef. This is just every home cook who...
Six fish?
Yeah. We don't know how big those fish are. Judging by the size, comparing it to the other stuff, they could be like
two
sardines.
Artichokes. Yeah, they could be sardines. You're right. We don't know.
Herring. She's well off, whoever she is. She's
very well off. She has expensive gear. And a jacket that snitches on her, I think, is the impression I'm getting from this image.
So I think this was a photo essay taken from an artist. And I think actually what they're probably showing is how you can imbue everyday objects with touch using Jacquard. Imbue everyday objects with technology with Jacquard.
Yeah, he actually used his Levi's jacket to control his presentation.
Right, which having played with touch technology that's this kind of gimmicky stuff, that's exactly what it's good for.
I once saw Mick Fleetwood do an entire drum solo on his clothes.
Yes.
I want to see Karsten replace the TriCaster with his jacket.
Wonderful.
When I thought of when they talked about Jacquard way back in 2015, when they talked about it at like I/O or wherever it was, I actually thought it was neat. Imagine if you, because it's touch sensitive, and it's I think it's fabric. It's a built-in fabric using like silver or something.
Right.
And what you can do, imagine that on like your couch, on the arm of your couch or your favorite chair. It's just built in and it links into whatever your TV remote is. And then suddenly you don't have that remote. You just kind of run your hands on your couch.
But then you have to remember all the places to touch or not to touch if you don't want the channel to change.
Well, so the idea is eventually you'd have fabric that you could, you know, interact with that way. And that's actually, as we bring design that is imbue more things with technology, having the devices understand your intentions is going to be the next or a next big area of design research.
Should be the first thing you do, not the last.
Well, but you got to build it and see what happens
That's the stage they're at right now, clearly. And Chris Anderson, who runs TED, came on stage apparently and asked Puperev whether there needs to be some kind of contract ensuring this data isn't abused, since it potentially creates the biggest ever surveillance network for Google or another company. You know, it's unfortunate that we've gotten to this position now where we don't, and understandably, don't trust these companies. And it could slow down this kind of innovation because people just don't.
I think that's good.
It is good.
I think that's
so we have
essential.
That conversation. As long as we continue to do it, right?
And we are. I mean, that's where we're, I don't think it's crazy to be like, you know, I'm sure when generals like came up against the first people who had guns or maybe arrows, they were like, holy cow, this is a new technology. We got to figure out what this is, how we adapt to it.
Right.
It's not crazy for us to have that same thing. And I'm not saying this technology is as deadly, but it's definitely got similar types of repercussions in terms of like effects. So,
yeah. This is where I'm on Jeff's side of this whole moral panic thing, because sometimes that could be used to shut stuff down instead of just say, let's really talk about the issues here. I think that's what we do well, and that's why it's great to have both of you kind of fighting back and forth on this, because it's reasonable to consider it.
It's not crazy to press pause. And if you shut something down for a little while and then you recognize, I mean, like I've kicked things, I'm sure everyone's done this. I've kicked things out of my house and then like 2 weeks later, I'm like, dude, that was dumb. I really need this. And then you realize where you need it most and you start implementing
then
rules.
Don't you worry, as I do, that now, the only reason I'm hooked, I can't get rid of it, not because I do need it or because it's a benefit, but because I'm hooked on this stuff. Don't you worry about that?
No.
We got hooked on books. TV was going to be awful to us. We watch things. It's okay.
It's okay.
I would argue, though, let's just throw out this TV example for a second there, because Americans are now watching like 5 hours and 42 minutes.
Isn't that funny?
They're not really.
Not what you would have predicted.
I know they're not really.
You would have predicted that would go down and internet viewing would go up, and it's not the case. Both have gone up.
Well, overall video content viewing has gone up.
Yeah.
The slice of it happening on mobile and non-television networks.
But we're still watching
also increasing.
Traditional TV.
We're still watching a lot of traditional
TV.
We're still watching TV. But it's not growing. That what we're watching on traditional TV is not growing.
I know somebody.
We're still watching a lot.
Yeah. Like 4 hours if I may. Yeah.
How much?
I think there's a...
Jeez.
How much?
Four hours a day?
I think it's like roughly 4 hours a day or 3 hours and 52 minutes.
But if I may,
speak on behalf of the great unwashed masses, I think it's a little haughty to say, oh, all these people are doing all that and it's just awful for them. People do what they want to do in their lives and it's okay.
Well, I'm not saying it as those people. I am doing it too much. So,
well, yes, your judgment is too much, but others are doing it to what they ever want to do.
Yeah,
and that's
fine.
I'm
not trying to tell somebody to stop watching TV.
I would argue that television is... It's the opiate of the masses? No, that's religion. But I would say that there are repercussions to television. I don't think...
We are distracting ourselves to death.
Not just that, but think about, like, I look at someone like my father who watches a lot of Fox News and...
Well, there's
I
that.
I think the things that television brings out or certain types of television, and I'm not trying to throw Fox News under the bus. There are programs on the other side.
No, I would say all 24-hour news is bad for us. Some's worse than others, but any 24-hour news channel has an imperative to ramp up everything because they need to fill the time. Everything becomes important, even the smallest detail. And I know because I remember having to fill 12 hours a day on tech TV
Yeah.
And that's the result of it, is you go, every story is a big story.
So I wrote a, I'm not going to drag you through this, but I wrote a long and esoteric, see, I confessed that, so watch out, post today about, I think I mentioned this in the past, this it was inspired by this book, How History Gets Things Wrong, The Neuroscience of Our Addiction to Stories.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And
I got to read that. That's a really compelling title.
Yeah. In this post today, which is on the rundown, where I admit it's long and esoteric, but you can plug it anyway, I go through his rationale about this. And, you know, part of what he says in there is we love stories. And part of the reason we're addicted to stories is a story with conflict gets the oxytocin going.
Yep.
And I went into various of the academic, not that I'm an academic, but I try to play one on TV or on podcasts, search engines for papers, and started reading through. And it's fascinating. They're doing experiments about whether oxytocin, if injected or if up the nose, makes you more or less likely to connect with other people.
Just by the way, and we're not talking OxyContin, which is an addictive opiate and a real problem in the United States. We're talking oxytocin, which is, they call it the love hormone,
which is manufactured by your own body.
Yeah.
And it's manufactured when you have an orgasm.
Or nipple
stimulation. So it makes you feel good.
Or hello, after you give birth, or when you cuddle a baby, or even when you pet a dog.
When babies nurse, it causes the phone to ring. When babies nurse, the stimulating the nipple, that stimulates oxytocin. I always have to get it right. And you feel love. And that's if you think about it, a great hormone. But it is also an addictive hormone. It's a pleasure hormone.
Right. And so things are set up and structured for this. Now, you could imagine using it for good in the sense that so there's this great line I quoted. Hold on, let me get this because I love this. I love this part. Medium.
So, in fact, this story says it's not attachment that's going on. It's addiction to oxytocin that we interpret as attachment. I love my baby. No, no, I just want more oxytocin.
How did we get here from Jacquard? I feel like I fell asleep for a minute.
It's moving fast, and I'm going to keep it moving fast. No, because you've got to go get queso or something. I can't remember, but there's
no. Sorry, you guys. I was like, wait a second. Did I just like have a narcoleptic moment?
No. Honestly, everybody listening
to
this show, everybody listening to the show has had exactly that same experience. So thank you, Stacey, for mirroring our audience.
Let me shift the conversation just a little bit.
Yes.
But stay in the same rut.
Yes. Here comes Harvard.
Yeah, Harvard's in. EU votes to create giant biometrics database. They're going to create the Common Identity Repository, CIR, which is fingerprints, DNA, and the idea is it'll be used across borders by law enforcement everywhere in the EU. Boy, you really, that was a head laugh. From oxytocin
nothing
to that.
Nothing could possibly go wrong.
And so all I argue.
Carson is attempting a course correction, but I feel at this point a little whiplash.
I'm just going back to things that could possibly go wrong.
Okay, what could possibly go wrong?
So
you really want to know what could possibly go wrong? I got something that could possibly go wrong. You made queso out of Cheez-Its.
Ew.
Oh,
How would you get it?
Now down me.
It's called Cheez-It Queso Fundido. Liven up your snacking routine with some zesty Cheez-It Queso Fundido baked snacked crackers. So they're
going to make Cheez-Its out of queso, not queso out of Cheez-Its.
We're putting the queso back in Cheez-Its.
Yeah,
does it stuff with queso?
That is like pepper jack cheese.
Wait, let me explain. Is it just queso flavored, or is there like it pops out of your mouth?
This is the weasel word. It's inspired by the taste of chilies, peppers, and scrumptious cheese.
What I was hoping was when you bite into the Cheez-It, you get a little burst of queso.
Ooh, like a cheesy lava cake?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or that gum that you chew and it's got fruit flavors.
It's got queso inside. My patent.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Can I ask one off-purpose question? And I'm asking this of the queso queen. Could you make a keto queso? In other words, a non-carb queso? Because I could eat that.
Isn't cheese not
It is, but there's flour in it, isn't there, or something like that?
Oh, no, that's like a fermented. No, yeah, that's a bechamel sauce or something.
Oh, okay.
No. Yeah, you're fine. You put milk in your quesos to thin it so it's not like you got to get the right consistency.
Heavy cream, cheese, and jalapenos is all you need.
Oh, well, there you go. You're fine.
Heavy cream?
Well,
is milk or cream?
That's
carb-free?
No, Velveeta is not free.
Velveeta is not really cheese, but it is the key to most quesos. Tex-Mexi quesos.
So, heavy whipping cream is keto friendly, and that's why I choose heavy whipping cream. That
I choose it because it's delicious.
It's so good. It is keto. I found a keto queso. There you go. Okay. Sorry about that digression. Back to the undersea cables.
No, we went on to Jacquard. And then Karsten tried
to go back to my post, whether you like it or not.
Let's go back to Mark Zuckerberg's podcast. I wonder what he's talking about now.
That wasn't even in the show yet.
Okay. I've got to get control.
Google I.O.
is coming up. We're going to be doing some fun stuff for Google I.O. So that will be a week from Tuesday, right?
May 7th.
Yeah, May 7th. Jeff is going to be there. Jason Howell is going to be there. Florence Ion is going to be there. However, this is how we're going to do it. We will do the keynote. It's, I think, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, but you'll have to check the schedule for that. We will do a live stream of the keynote on Tuesday. And then Jeff's going to actually brave the Golden Gate Bridge and drive up.
I'm going to put on...
he's going to close his eyes when he drives over the bridge. And we'll do a special twig the following day.
I'm getting nervous even now.
Stacey, you're not going to I.O. this year, are you?
I am in California. I'm in Anaheim, unfortunately, and then I'm in San Jose on the 9th.
Oh, you just
So I'm
going to
be
it.
On a plane during the keynote. I know, I'm terrible. I'm just flying all over California and bypassing Petaluma.
Yeah, as usual. That's okay.
If you were in the Bay Area, I would totally be there.
I believe this is considered part of the Bay Area, but I may be
Really?
Yeah.
Is so far
the northernmost finger of the San Francisco Bay.
Well, all right,
is right out our door.
You got a point. Okay, you win.
And Jeff, I have planned out a route that doesn't involve bridges. If you'd like me to send that,
it goes through Reno. Don't listen to him.
It only goes through Stockton and Sacramento.
You can go around.
Yeah,
right. Sacramento.
Go around. No bridges involved.
So when I was at the Examiner. A reporter named Lynn Ludlow, it's a man's name, got challenged on his expense account for not having a receipt for the bridge toll. So he said, "You're right, you caught me." And he tracked that and charged for the mileage going all around.
That's clever.
Yeah, it is.
That's clever. Anyway, we're excited about Google I.O. What do you think we're going to see at Google I.O.? Will they hand out? I think the rumor is we're going to see the new inexpensive Pixel phone.
Exciting.
Although.
Is it?
For one day only,
yes.
Yesterday, Google was offering half off the Pixel 3.
Oh, half I should have off. Taken that up because I'm about to need a new phone. Actually,
what month is missed it?
No, I'm 6 months from a new phone. Ideally.
You didn't miss it. $200 off the Pixel 3 and 3 XL right now. So,
but it was even more off,
I think it
right?
was even more, as I remember.
$500 off.
Yeah. Still, these are... Usually when you see a company doing this kind of deep discount, it means
they're about to roll replacements.
Yeah.
Are on the way.
Yeah. So I don't, you know, what we had thought is this low-cost Pixel 3A would be not a replacement, but an addition to a less expensive version of the phone trying to broaden the market. This Pixel 3 has been successful. The Pixel 2 did not sell a whole lot of phones. In fact, it sold the equivalent of 1 week of iPhone sales all year long.
Jesus. I still have my 2, and I'm very happy with it.
I love my 2. I'm looking for it right. Oh, it's right here in my pocket. You know what? The best part was I could remember. I forgot, actually, about the squeeze function. And then I squeezed my phone, and it was like, ooh.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop.
They're here. They're here. The family came home.
Yay! They didn't abandon me. Oh, they love me still. Oh, I'm not stuck here just with Stacy. Oh, she's no fun. She just talks at the wall for hours.
Oh, they didn't have the dog with them? the dog is announcing their arrival. I thought maybe
she's announcing their arrival. She's crazy right now because thunderstorms and the move. She's just neurotic as all get.
She know what the hell to do. Yeah.
Isn't it funny how animals kind of sense that something disruptive is happening and they
are. Well, we put her in a new house.
Yeah. But did she know before the move that she could kind of sense that this is not good, whatever's going on?
Boxes.
I think so.
Our cats,
boxes,
our
lots
cats,
of boxes.
Yeah. Our cats know that when we're going on a trip, they know when the suitcases come out and they pee in them. Just to make sure we don't go anywhere. At least that's how I'm interpreting it.
I like my dog even more now.
Yeah. He doesn't pee in your suitcase? Isn't that awesome?
So Android Q.
Yes. we're currently on Pi. Q, which will be Quince Jam. We don't know. I mean, we can't think of what a dessert begins with Q.
What features do we die for?
There are
rumors. I was thinking the other day, Leo. We used to, on this show, we used to mark a new version of Chrome.
We don't say that anymore because we're up to Chrome. 74.
Well, 73. Of course not. But we used to do that, right?
Yeah, we did.
And I think we're there with the damned.
I feel that way. Like Android's pretty versions, much phone cooked.
It's pretty much done.
So here is an example article from Android Police. Google's considering replacing Android's back button with a gesture in Android Q.
That I'm not looking forward to. That I don't like.
Now, I thought they'd already done this. Don't you have gestures that go back in Android P?
You're thinking of the selecting all the previous things menu.
Yeah. Well, and also I'm thinking of my Galaxy S10 Plus, which has
the square button.
It's all gestures. So I take on my S10 Plus, I don't have any indicators at the bottom at all. If I swipe up from the middle, that's home. If I swipe up from the right, that's previous. And I love that close all button, even though it's not necessary. If I swipe up from the left, it's the previous thing I did. Since I haven't done anything previously, I just closed everything. It's nothing. But gestures are big on Android, and I think that this isn't surprising. So this is the video, Android Q.
You know, I still can't get the gesture that says what's open on your Android now. I keep on messing that up every time. I can't get that one right.
Yeah, you just saw me do it on the – now that's an S10 feature. You swipe up on the right. So you think of these three buttons as being below the screen, so they're kind of invisible. And the swipe, you can change this on the Samsung, but the swipe is so you swipe up from the middle for home. So let me go to the wrong page. And the swipe up from the middle is home.
Well, that wasn't for home. It's the one where you find everything.
Yeah,
open.
I'm showing you all three of them. This one on the right is what you did previously, but I don't have any recently used apps. But I don't know if that's Android or Samsung.
No, you see, then I get. No, here's the problem, Leo.
That's non-standard. This is another thing I really love about the S10. You see that little chat head? Facebook pioneered these little pop-up notifications. Now with the S10, I can have every notification be a little pop-up, and I tap it to open it up, which is great. Or I can throw it away by swiping it off the screen somewhere.
I'd rather have fewer notifications. I'm like,
well, that's what I do. I only so that's Lisa. See, I see a little picture of Lisa, so I know that's a text message from Lisa, which is why, by the way, I'm not opening it. Okay, she's yelling at me or something.
She thanks you for that.
Okay, let me now see what she said. Actually, let me show you because I also have one from the New York Times. So when I tapped Lisa's head, it opened, and so I can see there's also a news thing. I will tap that to open it, and then it opens as a window, and which I can make full screen, or I can shrink away, or I can close away. I think that's a really nice. That's a Samsung UI feature. But apparently that will also be in Q, or something similar to that will also be in Q. This is the, just if you want to see the gesture, this is the version Q gesture. Do you see that? He just swiped up. He's swiping left, right. I don't know what he's doing now.
It's happening.
It lets you swipe from the edge of the screen to go back just as you would on an iPhone 10. iPhone kind of did pioneer this. They had it. So it's not enabled by default in the current version of Q. You have to use some ADB command. Okay, this is geeky. Some ADB commands to turn that on. That's something very XDA developers.
Oh, what is that?
Command lines. ADB shell settings, put global prototype enabled one. ADB shell settings, put global script. Blah, 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 blah.
I love how Stacy is riding her own pot for the dog.
Wait, where do you do that? Where do you go to do that?
So ADB, which is the debugging interface, you plug your phone into Windows or a computer, and then you can run the ADB program, which you have to download separately, and then you can issue commands. That's how you also root it. You've probably done it because if you've ever
rooted, I've rooted my phone, but I wasn't like 100% sure what I was doing.
Yeah, that's the Android
debacle. Kevin was helping me because he's so nice.
I'm not, you know, I don't normally care that much about the rumors about what the next version of Android is going to do, because it may or may not do it. You know, it's one of those, you can spend a lot of energy. And I got this from doing an Apple podcast for so many years. You spend a lot of energy on rumors that never happen.
Well, and it feels like, I mean, I'm thinking about the things in tech right now that I'm excited about, and they are not things on my phone. And part of it's because I'm an IoT person, but I'm even thinking about things like VR, and I'm kind of like,
well, interesting. NAB, the big National Association of Broadcasters conference, which ended last week, in years previous, last few years, augmented reality, virtual reality, huge. Not at all. Hardly at all.
Right.
And I think that that portends something. Now, F8's coming up. Are you going to go to F8? You usually
I'm not now.
Not now.
Not now.
They will announce their new standalone Oculus. So there's still, you know, people are still making these things, but I think that the interest in it has somewhat died out.
It's just a lot of mishigas.
It's like 3D on TVs and in movies.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a big thing, but nobody... It didn't...
Surround, what do we call quadraphonic?
Yeah, quadraphonic. Actually, that's back, though. We all have surround, Dolby Surround now.
Yeah, that's true.
Bob Heil, the host of our ham show, invented the joystick that the Who used in Quadrophenia to pan the music all around the concert hall. That's claim to fame. He also, I mean, as long as we're talking claim to fame, he also invented the mouth organ that Peter Frampton used in.
Wow.
Yeah. He tells the story. It's a great story. Peter Frampton's wife came to him. Bob was a well-known rock and roll sound guy. Came to him and said, I want to give Peter something for his birthday. Do you have any ideas? And Bob said, yeah, I can do this. And he built this thing that takes the mouth cavity, plays the sound from the guitar into the mouth cavity through a hollow tube, and then you keep your mouth near the microphone and go like that, and the sound comes alive. And Frampton came alive as a result.
Wow. That is some geeky stuff.
Should we talk about Twitter?
Sure.
Jack Dorsey in the Oval Office yesterday.
Hold on. Was that all we expect from I.O.?
It's a major ADD week. It's squirrel.
Well, what else might we see at I.O.? I don't actually have any more stories about what we might see at I.O.
There's questions about, are we going to do stuff with assistant? Yeah, so Duplex getting better, more assistant voices. Oh, my God.
They'll probably show more of Duplex, although remember how much heat they got from showing Duplex making restaurant reservations last year. And then everybody said, you ought to tell people when you're doing that. And apparently they are rolling it out still. I don't know. I think, sometimes I don't want Google to announce new things because I know they're just going to kill them.
Yep.
It's just
I think it's important to start those conversations. I think that's kind of the nice thing about Duplex. And I'm sorry, I'm not torturing my dog, you guys. She's just scared of thunderstorms, and she's just going to whine. She's like a little husky.
Is it thunder and lightning very, very frightening right now?
It is. Oh, it is. Sorry. And there's no buffer. She's usually, I can usually shut the door, but I'm in an apartment only for a few weeks. No, sorry, y'all.
No apology necessary. We love the sounds of life in our podcast because, frankly, we love podcasts. Unlike the Washington Post columnist who freaking hates podcasts. Did you see that today?
No, I didn't see this one. Is it on the rundown?
It should be. If it isn't, let me find it because, I didn't put it in the rundown, dummy.
We spent about 2 seconds on Twitter.
No, we're getting back to that. Believe me, there's a lot more. There's a lot more.
We're hitting the back button a lot.
There's
this
a lot
show.
More. We hit the back button. Times. We did. We hit the back button on this one. This is
squirrel.
This is more like I don't know what this is. This is more like a minor digression to make time for Stacy's dog to get over its fits. Are podcasts killing music or just wasting our time? This is your choice. Killing music or wasting time?
Oh,
which is
the music thing, right. Okay,
it's a
right.
pop music critic named Chris Richards. He says, I'm about to kick a hornet's nest, and if this were a podcast, you would now hear the crunch of a boot perforating a hive, following by, I don't know what podcast he listens to. Have we ever sweetened our podcast with sound effects like that? I don't think so. He says he thinks podcasts
Radio
are...
Lab.
Radio Lab is what he's talking about, yeah. This is the problem. He listens to the wrong podcast. I think they're tedious and samey and sedative, and when I'm feeling especially cranky, I consider them an enemy of music. Most podcasts are conversations for people to eavesdrop on, yes. Oh, now this is where he's really cutting to the quick. Recorded talk that precludes real life talk about real life.
What does that mean?
With zombie talk about podcasts. Also, I like music. he also, he does, although some of the things he says, I kind of like. He says, I hate podcasts because of how they sound. Forget the lousy microphones and the dinky interstitial stock music. The thing that derails most podcasts, and as the king of derailed podcasts, I'm going to pay attention here. What is that? It's the blab. There are two kinds, more or less. And I, by the way, I do not disagree with him on that. The first is that
what
soft.
What are we doing right now?
Yeah. Well, we're doing the second kind. The first is that soft, inquisitive staccato popularized by Ira Glass on This American Life. Jeff Jarvis was a normal man on a normal day as he walked down the sidewalk headed to the end. The source from which so much pod voice appears to have sprung. The second podcast mode, this is ours, by the way, is performative in a different way, and you hear it on most round table podcasts, a tone that people use at parties when they want to be heard by people that aren't necessarily talking to. And it's pretty much one or the other. Be podcasted to in a cozy, overly considered way, or be podcasted at in a hastier, less considered way. I prefer to be the hastier, less considered podcast.
S Club Hasty and Less Considered. Woo-hoo! Guilty as charged.
So I can't completely disagree with him, except for the part where podcasts are killing music. I hope we're not killing music, and I don't think we're killing music.
And I think there's a place for people who can listen to a good podcast, or for a lot of people, a good podcast is like listening in on your friends have a conversation about something.
I think that's what our shows are, at least we're trying to be.
Yeah, and I think there's a place for that for people, especially if you don't have friends who are necessarily interested in the same things you are. So, like, I don't know. I listen to people talk, like, I listen to podcasts about, like, pop culture and stuff because I don't really have a lot of friends where I can sit there and talk about the latest in fashion with. And I like them.
Podcasts are
and
just...
And I still talk to real people.
One more way, and in this case, a very, I think, democratic, egalitarian way of sharing ideas and voices, in case of podcasts, voices that are often not heard elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very intimate. And I think a lot of people, certainly our listeners, spend time listening in the car when they're on their way to work. We compete with audiobooks. You could say audiobooks are killing music. We compete with all kinds of different, ear entertainment. And I think that's good. You have a lot more choices when you're sitting in your car stuck on the 404 than you used to, which is great.
And listening to radio voices telling you the next song. It was awful. Broadcast radio was terrible. It needed replacing.
I don't know. There was
radio killed music.
Yeah, that's true.
Radio
what
is what killed music. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I used to like, there was a morning show I used to like here. They don't do it anymore. But I always thought those were kind of silly fun. But that's just
why I listen to Howard Stern.
Now, would you pay £50 for a podcast recorded on a wax cylinder?
No.
Hello, Internet. No. It's a podcast, 2 minutes in duration, stored in a solid cardboard tube. One cylinder per order because, well, they're hard to make. They're using these giant...
A gamophone?
Yeah.
On the 3rd of April, 2019. Okay. Hi there, everyone. This is Brady recording live onto a wax cylinder record to promote our Hello Internet episode, which is going to be released on a wax cylinder.
Ironically, they are also recording it with high-quality audio and video equipment across the room so that we can see it on YouTube. Anyway, I like that. I think it's funny that they did it. I wouldn't pay £50 for it.
Not even to send it to the locker gnome?
Should I send it to Chris Perillo? You think he'd enjoy it? He's the one who broke the Edison cylinder. Yeah. I know. I got the reference. Although, I'm sad to say that that was a hoax, the whole thing. Although, you can see it and watch it on YouTube if you'd like to relive it. By the way, he also says, this guy, writing in the Washington Post, like it or not, podcasts are invading a sound world near you. The marquee names of podcasting, Pod Save America, the Joe Budden podcast, and Terrible, Thanks for Asking. I'm familiar with one of them. And many others are currently appearing on actual marquees, bringing the discussions into nightclubs and theaters, usually dedicated to live music. How dare they?
Okay, I will say I went to a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me broadcast.
Awesome, right?
Awesome.
It's so much fun. Was Carl Castle still there or he had passed away?
He had passed by then.
Yeah.
Well, maybe no.
I would have liked to have seen Carl Castle before he
took
the big walk to the radio microphone in the sky or whatever it is we're headed for. Huh? All right. Okay. Take a break. We will talk about Twitter. Then we will talk about, I'm actually saving my outrage. Because there's some outrageous Facebook stuff. Outrageous.
Oh, wait. Can we also talk about the Galaxy Fold? Or is that crazy?
Yeah. No, we could. Okay. We really should. Okay. Yeah. Because I was going to go to the T-Mobile store on Friday and buy one. Samsung saved my $2,000. Thank you, Samsung. And AOC, she's quitting Facebook, and she says you should too. Socialist. Meanwhile, I'm going to show you how you come to our studio. When you come to our studio, and you're welcome. We have an open studio. We love a studio audience. You email tickets at twit.tv so we know to put a chair out for you. In the past, when you've come to our studio, we have handed you a fairly long double-sided document, a legal disclaimer, and required that you read through it, sign it before you enter our studio. We have simplified the process considerably. Thanks to Envoy, which is an awesome iPad app designed for signing people in. This is Envoy Visitors. They have other apps as well. In fact, there's a delivery app that the delivery guy, the UPS or FedEx guy, can say, you know, show what he's delivered. And then it notifies the employee that their package is at the front desk. This notifies the employee that their guests have arrived. It's nice. See, it has our logo. You tap to sign in. You put in your name. It's completely replacing all that paperwork we used to do or the paper logbook that's completely useless. You could sign in unlimited visitors. You can, if you want, connect it to a printer, print customized badges. You could set up VIP names. You could say, if Jeff Jarvis signs in, please sound the alarm and get everybody down the hall to welcome him. And it will even, for security reasons, notify administrators about unattended guests. When visitors arrive, they sign in on the kiosk. They enter their details. They sign any legal documents, NDAs, right on the iPad. Envoy will then notify their host automatically, and it uses all the tools you probably already use, like Slack or Box or Salesforce Chatter or G Suite. So your employee knows a guest is there, so you don't have to call them or anything. They come down the hall. By the way, no more awkward meetings coming down the hall, not expecting somebody, and there he is in the lobby. You don't have to worry about that either. You'll boost your office efficiency. You'll add to security without intimidating your visitors. In fact, visitors, we know because we've used this for a while now, love it. It's a great way to make your office both more welcoming and more secure, and it works for all companies of all kinds, even those in highly regulated industries, because it meets security and compliance requirements. So many companies, Nike, see the Nike swoosh, Mazda, Weight Watchers, Pinterest, Slack, L'Oreal, and Twit. We all use Envoy to welcome over 30 million visitors so far. Protect your people, your property, and your ideas the welcoming way with Envoy. 10,000 people, 10,000 workplaces use Envoy worldwide to make a great first impression. I love it because we didn't have to buy additional hardware. It runs in a normal iPad. Envoy is the software, and you just put it on any iPad, and most of us have a few iPads lying around. Envoy.com/twit. Start your free trial today. Welcome to the modern lobby with Envoy. Envoy, ENVOY.com/twit. Thank you, Envoy, for your support. Thank you for supporting us by using that URL if you want to check out Envoy. It really is great. Just love it. I've been actually looking for something to do this ever since we started having, you know, we have a guard at the front desk and we have a big sign-in process. And you have to these days, unfortunately, for legal and security reasons. But this really simplifies it. Galaxy Fold! Man, you know, it was so funny because the first initial thoughts as the Galaxy Fold started to go out to reviewers like Steve Kovac and Marques Brownlee, Joanna Stern at the Journal, and Dieter Bohn, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, they started the first day, they go, oh, I get it. I get it. This is exactly what you want a phone to be. Simple and small for the basic stuff, but you can open it up and get a nice 7-plus-inch screen. That was day one. Day two, it broke. I mean, for different reasons. So Marques Brownlee and Stephen Kovac removed a plastic coating on top of it, which I don't blame them for doing. When I got my Galaxy S10 and many Samsung phones, they have a pre-installed screen protector. I don't like screen protectors, so I peel them off. I did that on my S10. Turns out that wasn't a screen protector. That was
well, it was in a way.
Well, it literally protected the screen. Here's iFixit's article about this. It was necessary. See, the problem with flexible screens, they have to be OLED screens. They're very fragile. So they have a layer, they're plastic, so they have a layer of plastic on top of it, but they're also sealing it. And this is the other problem with the Galaxy Fold, according to iFixit. When you close it, that when you see that hinge, you can see that it's not, that the screen is not fully sealed. And that was the problem Dieter Bohn had at The Verge. He said, we think what happened, when we take pictures for our reviews, we use a little molding putty underneath the device to hold it in place or hold it up. We think that got into the hinge, and then that caused a protrusion on the screen. In any event, when you send out, I don't know what they sent out, a couple of dozen, we didn't get one, but I know a lot of people did. In fact, Renee Ritchie said they had two at Mobile Nations. When you send out, say, a couple of dozen phones, and half of them get broken in the first 2 days, you know you have a problem. Samsung said, okay, we're not going to launch that phone Friday. We're going to step back and figure out what's going on. So,
I wonder how many they've made.
I was impressed because Samsung originally was like, we're not delaying the launch. And then like a few hours later, they're like, Oh, okay, they had to. Well, that's what everyone, because like, that's what I thought. I was like, wow, this is, it's pretty
You don't want
bad.
The Note 7 thing all over again, right?
No. They
had to recall every single Note 7.
Yeah, these phones weren't blowing up, but yeah, it was still bad.
You would still have to recall it if you found
you
it.
You would, they had to especially break at $2,000
to stop people from using them.
Yeah. So AT&T representatives say June 13th. So it's not that long. It's a month and a half later. Samsung says, no, we haven't set a date. But AT&T is adamant. So I think it's reasonable that AT&T thinks it's going to be then, but Samsung wants to reserve the right not to ship it if they think yeah. there'll be any problem. Save me $2,000. That's all I'm saying. Because I was going to go into T-Mobile on Friday and buy one because I wanted to talk about it. And I was kind of excited because it is the first really new form factor for a phone we've seen in a while.
I was super excited. I was so bummed when I started seeing this. I was like, oh, yeah, I really want to see, like, again, new form factor. And I really thought they had it right, I guess. I was like, Samsung wouldn't put out something that wasn't, you know, engineered and considered. This isn't like, you know, what was Andy Rubin's company? I can't think of it right now.
Essential.
This is Samsung. They know what they're doing, but no.
Well, and that is a bit of a question. I mean, how could you not see this coming? Did you never let it out of the lab? Didn't you give it to employees? Yeah. Apple does this. We know because employees have lost phones. Other companies do it to take into the wild and use for several months before you ship the phone. They must have. So it's puzzling.
Is it just because the cover was taken off by people?
No.
Or no. Okay.
There was another one too.
I thought there were a lot.
Joanna Stern started to peel hers back at the Wall Street Journal and then said, maybe not. Marques Brownlee and Stephen Kovac said, yes, we took it off. But Dieter Bohn did not, and his still got damaged.
And Mark Gurman didn't.
So
okay,
there's a problem. And the problem is probably that stuff can get in under the OLED screen. It is super fragile, and that's that's kind of like super fragile callistic expialidocious. It's super fragile, and you don't want anything to get in there. So one of the things Samsung said initially is, well, we're going to put a big warning on there. We should have told these guys, or there's a debate about whether they told the reviewers not to, but we're going to make sure that everybody who gets this phone knows, don't remove that. That's part of the screen.
By the way, so does it lock open?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, when you're working with it?
I don't think so.
When you want to watch a movie or something, do you have to hold both sides open? I always wondered that.
I don't know. And then I also read a number of commentaries about the fact that everybody has a different way of closing it. There's no obvious way of closing it.
Don't you just fold
it from the outside?
Well, some people might do it like that. Some people, Samsung, when they test, they have its testing machine, does it. In the testing machine, it's even pressure along the entire, machine is not a good, people are not going to do that. They're going to whack it closed, right?
Yeah.
Have a case like I have here, which is a case of cover, there's lots of ways of closing that case, and I probably use all of them. If I'm holding the phone like that, I might do that. So these test machines probably didn't catch this potential problem. In any event, I think I feel bad for Samsung. I've said this before. I love the S10 Plus. It's the best phone I've ever had. It's just incredible. And I was really hopeful. And I was willing to set, of course, I have a budget for this. This is my job. But I was willing to put aside $2,000 to get this phone.
I was willing to support you spending $2,000 just to see.
Okay. So there you go. Anything else you want to say, Stacey, about it? It's sad.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. It's not over. It's sad. You know what else is disappointing? Sprint settled with AT&T over 5GE. And AT&T is continuing to use the 5GE label on their phones. Sprint sued, saying it's blatantly misleading, but at some point settled. I don't know why they settled. I don't know why they sued if they planned to settle. They didn't settle in a way that kept AT&T from using it. I think it hurts AT&T, honestly.
It didn't. I mean, remember again, HSPA Plus, that did not hurt them.
No.
People
aren't that techie.
I just had someone ask me about, what was it? Oh, I have my cable installer today was telling me, he's like,
your cable installer finally came?
Finally came, yes.
I saw the dog waiting for the cable installer. Sorry, but this is more important news.
I miss all the good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, he was supposed to come, or the cable person was supposed to come Monday, and they never did. And then
that's a good thing to use. By the way, that is one of the best reasons to have a Twitter account, stuff like that.
Yes, so I posted a picture of my dog looking adorable, waiting for the cable person. We're sitting there today. He's installed the network, and it was a 2.4 gigahertz and a 5 gigahertz network. And I was like, are they the same? Do I need to have, is it an extender? Do I have to have a separate 5 gigahertz network? He's like, no, this is a 5G network. And I was like,
Oh, please.
And he didn't. I mean, he didn't.
He wasn't maliciously saying that.
No. He's like, and the 5G network's really fast. And I was like, It's true. The 5 gigahertz network is really fast. He's like, I don't know why people use the 2.4 network. It's silly. And I was like, it
doesn't carry
goes
as far.
Farther. Yeah. But so he was all excited about 5G. He's like, everyone's talking about it. And I was like, no. So, there's a lot of confusion out there is the point. On all 5G, 6G, LTE.
I'm going to give you an IoT. By the way, I'm really interested to see that your dog wears Nike shower shoes, much like Mark Zuckerberg.
Okay, those are soccer shoes.
Okay, sure. So your dog wears Nike soccer shoes.
Adidas.
Adidas, I mean, not Nike.
Yes.
Adidas, yeah. Very important to get the brand right.
It is. It is. She doesn't want to get a ringworm in the shower, I guess, or whatever it is that those prevent.
Here is an IoT tip you can use in your newsletter. I had somebody call the radio show and say, you know, some of these IoT devices don't work with 5G. But this is the case of for me at home. We have a 5G and 2.4G, but they're the same name. And some IoT devices are
5G. Can't,
did I say 5G? 5 gigahertz.
You said
5 gigahertz. 5GHz.
Ah, you just did it. Leo is the cable installer.
So, lady, I'm telling you, you got your 2.4G.
He's got your 5G. It's perfect.
Some of this stuff works with 5G. 5 gigahertz. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I have to say GHZ. All right. So, 5 gigahertz.
Gigahertz.
Just call it AC.
Well, AC is both. So anyway, 5 gigs.
These are not HC routers, by the way, or AC routers, by the way, Karsten. But keep
going. So sometimes the IoT device will join the 5G network, 5 gigs network, and not work. And so somebody called the radio show and said, well, what do I do about that? Then a guy called in and said, I got a solution for you. It works for me every time. You start walking. And you get so far away that the 5 gigahertz signal does not go as far as the 2.4, right? So you have so far away that the 5 gigahertz signal is so attenuated, your phone joins the 2.4 gigahertz, then you pair it up.
That's actually a really good idea.
Isn't it? Put it in your newsletter. I'm telling you.
You know, Kevin and I have talked about this. It's actually a very common
question. It's a conundrum. Yes.
Well, there's a couple issues. Google Wi-Fi is actually a huge perpetuator of this problem. My Eero stuff almost always works with every device.
Yeah, Eero does it right. No, I agree with you. Eero does it right. Yeah.
Yeah. Google Wi-Fi is funky, and
a lot of them are funky. A lot of them don't.
Orbi,
do right.
I think, is funky. Velops isn't funky, but yeah, there is, and part of it is because what.
We should have a funky, not funky list, I think would be really good. So we could put that in your newsletter and smoke it.
Pass, no pass.
Pass, no. Funky, not funky.
So yes, that is a excellent pro tip, and I will put that in the newsletter. Actually, we'll share it on the podcast.
Pro tip, yeah. You don't have to give me credit.
I always give credit. Credit where credit is due, credit man.
Well, I should give credit to this listener, Colin. I don't know his name off the top of my head.
I am really disappointed.
We were talking for years. We've been talking about the laundry folding robot.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Sure.
They just filed for bankruptcy.
Oh, no.
Laundroid.
Oh, you know, there's a new laundry folding robot. And the fun part about this one.
Yeah.
Is that it's the robot with hands, but when the time comes and you want to fold your laundry, you tell it and a person comes and operates the hands.
That's called a maid.
So it's like a mechanical Turk that folds your laundry. It's $3,000. It's in Japan. And it's kind of an interesting concept because basically it's still a robot, still folds laundry, so you don't have to. It's laundry folding as a service. Backed by a human being somewhere in the world.
Laundry folding is a service. We call that wash and fold.
I mean, it's like labor arbitrage, basically. Yeah, you could have someone in the Philippines come over and fold your laundry without actually ever leaving their house.
Anyway, if you've been waiting for the laundry folding robot, anxious to buy it. By the way, only $16,000.
Yeah, see, the new one's three.
$3?
A pound. No, 3,000.
Oh.
3,000.
Wait a minute. And you still have to pay somebody to fold your laundry?
No, that's part of the $3,000.
Oh, it includes. Well, how many hours of laundry folding?
You know, I did not investigate that.
Is there a person in the box? Where's this person? No.
They get in and teleoperate. Yeah, they teleoperate it.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. No, this must not succeed. No. Because then I see, I imagine an office building somewhere outside of Phoenix with thousands of people in little cubicles wearing visors, folding your laundry with joysticks. But that's there. Not.
But what if it was like the Japanese robot cafe that's operated by
that was interesting. Handicapped people.
Yeah, so this is kind of like, let's see, where should I put this? I'm going to try to put this in the show notes somewhere, but I don't know where. Governments, changelog, other.
Put it at the bottom.
Put it at the bottom. All the good stuff's at the bottom.
Oh, here. Laundry bot. Oh, I put it in the wrong place, Carson. I'm an idiot. There we go.
This has been a fun show. I like it.
It's giving me a headache.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The reason this
robot laundry is exciting, and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, is there's a big trend towards teleoperations of all kinds of devices, from autonomous cars to ferries to even drones. So like Google, actually, just to bring it back to Google, because I love y'all like that, their Wing.
Okay, first of all, there's a guy holding the plug, feeding out the wire to the robot so that it can walk
over.
You need a gaffer for the robot so it can walk over to the washing machine.
Wait, no. Actually, what we need is a teleoperated robot to gaff.
And there's another guy holding a laundry basket, also following the robot carefully.
The robot, by the way, was twitching its fingers.
This is not going to work. The robot is...
Both of those guys could be replaced by more robots. Yeah.
It's robots all the way down.
All the way down.
Why don't we just make a washing machine that folds your laundry? Another guy is bringing out a laundry hanging device. Oh, my God.
Well, this is a demo.
This is it. This
In your
is
house,
the answer
you
to
would
the joke.
Set things up.
How many engineers does it take to fold a T-shirt? Apparently... 3 plus a robot.
So, and this guy is your remote operator, I believe.
Yes, I see him there, yes.
Well, so you know the reason why laundry folding robots are so hard, right? It's so difficult to do.
Why?
Because it's very hard. A computer can be trained to do one specific object really well, right? Or one specific thing really well. So it can pick up an object of the same size and put it in the same place every time. What's hard is when you do laundry, there's different size things. So it's like, I don't know, you know, it's finger grasping can't always grasp the things correctly. And when you fold it,
that's hard.
Requiring.
And everything's different. There's no standard. I want to see this demo on Shark Tank. I think this would be an awesome demo. By the way, incidentally, I hope we don't get the Yugo Corporation taking our video from today down. If our video is taken down by a laundry folding robot, that will, in fact, be the day I quit podcasting.
Would that be your 3 strikes?
That's the 3 strikes. No, we haven't. We don't have any strikes because we always appeal and they say, oh, yeah, we're right. You were right. We shouldn't have. So Google walkout organizers are saying they're facing retaliation for organizing those walkouts. Some of them have been demoted. Let me ask you this question though. And maybe it's because we're in California, which is an at-will work state. But honestly, if our employees decided to hold a walkout, I would have the right to fire them.
I don't know. What is that? Answer me this. If it is a labor organizing event, or
that's
you
different.
Can't walk
if it's
out,
a union, if it's a union event, that's protected. I can't. That would be union busting. Although there's plenty
what about
of that goes on.
What about an organizing event?
Is it whistleblowing? Because that's protected as
sure.
Well.
But then you'd have to be whistleblowing. They're not whistleblowing in the sense that there's
Carson. Get back in your desk.
They're not.
Don't get any ideas.
They're not revealing anything illegal that the company's doing. They're just saying we don't want to work on AI that helps the military or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't about their work conditions. It was a protest.
And in fact, right. that's true, Meredith Whitaker, who leads who leads Google Open Research, said that after the company disbanded its external AI ethics council on April 4th, she was told her role would be changed dramatically. She said, they told her in order to stay at the company at Google, you'd have to abandon your work on AI ethics, your role at the AI Now Institute, a research center she co-founded at NYU. Clara Stapleton, another walkout organizer and 12-year veteran of the company, said that 2 months after the protest, she was demoted from her role as marketing manager at YouTube and would lose half her reports. But is that illegal, is my question. It may be, reprehensible or moral or...
It's not good PR.
It's not good PR, but it's not illegal. And I think that a company has the right to retaliate against workers.
You serve at the company's will.
I hate to say it. I don't want to sound like,
John D. Rockefeller. Corporate apologist here, but you're right.
He's a corporate mogul himself.
Everything you say, Leo.
Right, Karsten?
You are absolutely, positively right. There's nothing wrong with anything you have ever said.
That's right.
When are you up for review, Karsten?
But there's James Damore, right, who wrote that reprehensible memo and did get fired.
But that's very different. That is an HR challenge, makes it difficult to work with him. I mean,
if you wrote an email to Larry Page or Sundar Pichai and said, I don't think we should be doing this kind of research, they're not going to demote you for that, or are they? I don't know.
Probably not, because they haven't been seen at the Googleplex in a while. So it would be someone else.
Yeah. Anyway, I bring this up. I think we've got one of these two on Tech News Weekly on Thursday. So you can get more of the story. One of the demotees.
Ah, okay.
One of the organizers of the Google walkout. One of these employees at Twit who is no longer working here. No, I wouldn't fire an employee for doing that.
I might.
Well, there you go. See?
Like, if Kevin's watching, he's on notice.
There was, remember when we had the total eclipse and everybody went out to see that? Mm-hmm. All three of you? it brought the operation to its knees for 30 minutes. So, the Twitter CEO goes to the White House. Mr. Dorsey goes to the White House. After... sending an email to his employees apologizing, in effect. He says, we meet with a lot of heads of state. We think it's good to have a conversation. I know, Jack Dorsey wrote, some of you think I shouldn't, but in the long run, I think it's good to meet heads of state in order to listen, share our principles and our ideas.
Like he's going to listen?
What do you do? So apparently, according to people in the room, because it was a closed-door meeting, there was no press, but some people leaked that the primary topic of discussion for the half hour was President Trump saying, why am I Twitter follower count going down? can you do something about it? And Dorsey said, well, mine went down too because we're getting rid of bots. It's normal. It's not...
No, but those are my Russian friends.
Yeah, really.
They're the ones who got me elected. Yeah. You can't get rid of them.
Trump had tweeted right before the meeting that Twitter was playing political games, tampering with his nearly 60 million followers. This is the Washington Post. A significant portion of the meeting focused on Trump's concern that Twitter quietly and deliberately has limited or removed some of his followers. Trump said he heard from fellow conservatives who had lost followers for unclear reasons as well. Twitter long explained follower figures fluctuate. I've lost several hundred thousand. I think. No, 50,000.
You quit your account.
I reinstated it, but there's a long story there. I didn't kill it. I just took a break.
Paused it.
And I recently reinstated it, although I go back and forth, as obviously, because every time I go on there, I go, well, it's not that valuable. I'm not sure I really need it. But I wanted to test. The reason I reinstated it, I think I talked about this last week or the week before, is Twitter had said, we are not going to wait for abuse reports to get rid of abusive tweets. We are going to be proactively eliminating abusive tweets. And I thought, what better way to test this policy than to paint a big target on my rump and go on Twitter? And so far, I have to admit, I haven't seen any abusive tweets. That will change now, I'm sure. But but I did notice when
just invited them.
I did. Yeah, I did notice when I came back that I probably lost about 50,000. A lot, not because I wasn't there, I think, but mostly because one thing, another thing I've noticed, your follower count goes up as long as you don't tweet. The minute you tweet, that's going to cut your follower count because there's going to be somebody who doesn't like what you say. So the best way to increase your numbers is just to have an account and publicize it, but not say anything.
I don't have that problem at all.
I know you and I have very different Twitters. There's Stacy Twitter and there's Leo Twitter.
I got no problems.
There's Stacy.
Stacy Twitter is wonderful.
I know.
Did you ever think the problem might be you?
What?
Well, in fact, I've been thinking about this lately, that we cover the internet the wrong way now. The internet has become so much ingrained in what we do that we should be covering the people who are on it, not the technology. Right? Whether it's Sri Lanka or whether it's anything else, we're covering Facebook as if it's an entity. No, we're covering the activities of people.
And well, that's the difference between you and me, because the heritage of what I do is has always been with the technologies. We were not specifically, whether it was Tech TV or early days of Twit, we were specifically not interested in people.
But you kind
of covering machines.
You have no hope now. You have no hope now. That's the problem.
Well, people that's what's ruined everything world, is people have gotten into
people
the machines.
People entered your world.
It's
the people
like
are in the machines.
Beautiful Galaxy Fold, and somebody put some people in it.
Yeah. That's your problem. There's your problem, Leo.
In a nutshell.
Yes.
But that's, and incidentally, that is a long-standing kind of evolutionary step in all technologies. I think I often compare it to the days, and you remember this, Jeff, in the early days of hi-fi, you had all these hi-fi magazines, and it was all about the hardware. It was all about, you know, how much power you could get without distortion and all this stuff. And then long around about the 60s when Rolling Stone came along, it suddenly started becoming about the stuff you played on the hardware, not the hardware itself. Hi-fi magazines went away. Rolling Stone and other magazines took over. And that's exactly the shift I think that's happened in technology, where in the early days of technology, we were talking about speeds and feeds and processors and hard drives.
But it's even more than that, because it's not the producers of the music. It's the listeners of the music.
Yeah.
Right? It's the audience. It's the public.
Well, that's interesting.
Has now entered into your world. And so it's not the tool. It's what it's being done with the tool. It needs the coverage.
Right.
Right.
So
that's
a great
that
post.
Is very true, Jeff.
Sorry.
That is good.
Can we mark this in the history books? Carson, can you put that in the history books?
Stacy just said, well, it's true. Up on me.
Yes, we are. There's a great post I put up on the
one thing they agree on, Leo is the problem.
I put a great post up on about the UK online harms report, which we talked about last week, in which he said that basically what the UK is trying to do is to pass an omnibus law against bad behavior without defining bad.
Right.
And because people are thinking it's a technology. No, it's people.
No different.
It's Soylent Internet.
Yeah.
It's right. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
And we're not thinking of it that way.
Is this the Europe Against the Net post?
No.
No, that's an older one.
That's much older. No, it's not my post.
I think you should call it the Soylent Internet. Gross.
It's made of people.
Where to put under government, maybe? Under government.
But you're right. And this is the point. I mean, if you want to, this is why we need to have government regulation / a conversation about what this means for people. And this is why diversity is so important now in tech.
Yes,
and people
yes.
still don't want. Because you're affecting so many different types of lives, and you need to have those perspectives in here, because it's you need to have your tools and services be reflective of the people that will use them. Otherwise, you build stupid stuff that either nobody likes or a small segment of the population mm-hmm. likes, mm-hmm. and you think it's all that and a piece of cake, aka Twitter. Did they just change everything about Twitter? Did that just happen?
Yeah, you must have the new UI. Are you looking at it right now?
I have the new UI.
Yeah.
Okay,
people are complaining. They always complain.
I'm not complaining. I'm just like, again, I've been moving. So did I just blink and Twitter changed? Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. They do that a lot. I don't know if that's really what
somebody was complaining about not being able to edit a photo. I didn't know you could edit a photo on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, you can edit all kinds of photos.
What?
I did not edit the photo of my dog, though. I should have cut out the slippers.
So the Pew Research Center on Internet and Technology, they are constantly doing surveys. This one, 2,791 U.S. adult Twitter users who are willing to share their Twitter handles. Survey says U.S. adult Twitter users are younger, not much of a surprise, and more likely to be Democrats than the general public.
Because they're younger.
Most users rarely tweet. The most prolific 10% create 80% of the tweets from U.S. adult users.
Hello, journalists.
Yeah, and they're probably all journalists. A large majority of tweets come from a small minority of tweeters.
Here's what's wrong with the logic behind this survey, if I may. It's treating Twitter's creators, Twitter's people, as if they're a mass audience that all see the same thing. So to say, it's what always drives me nuts when I see a headline. Twitter says, there's no such thing. Nobody sees the same Twitter. Nobody sees everybody on Twitter. The fact that the total makeup on Twitter is absolutely meaningless, utterly meaningless.
Because it's what you see.
Because there is no,
what you're saying
everybody
is,
sees
if
a
I
different
just
Twitter.
Follow people in my age cohort, my Twitter would be, you know, silver
old
Twitter.
Old farts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Twitter silver.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So to say that,
by the way,
Twitter
when can I get
has
that?
A characterization. No, Leo, those are the people causing the problems.
Anime silver just for you.
It's the people causing the problems, the old farts.
Most Twitter users engage modestly. The 10% of tweet most often focus more on politics and are, and here was a big surprise, mostly women.
Oh.
Huh.
Now, this is not what you're talking about, Jeff, because this talks about the entire universe. Admittedly, you know, if you don't follow any women, none of your the tweets in your feed are women. But still, I think it's germane to say that most of the people who tweet are women.
I wonder if that's because we can curate. And I mean, yes, people can come into they can slide into our DMs, but you can curate your experience to some effect on Twitter. And there's a lot of female journalists, believe it or not. Yeah.
I think, I don't want to make too many generalizations because you'll punch me. 65% of the top 10% of tweeters are women. So more than half that you would normally expense. Well, it's a significantly larger portion. That means 35% are men. That's a big deal, I think. Yeah. But that makes sense because women, if you're going to make the generalization that's going to cause you to punch me, are more like to communicate.
Actually, I wasn't going to make that generalization.
You can still punch them.
Because women don't have as many avenues, mainstream avenues, it's a good opportunity to share our thoughts on things.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, this is when I had a fit with Farhad Manjoo for telling journalists to get off Twitter. People who had never been heard before in mainstream media who aren't in newsrooms finally have a voice, and you're going to turn your back on them.
Oh, that's really interesting. You convinced me to reactivate my Twitter account.
Without Twitter, we wouldn't have had Me Too and Living While Black.
Wow, that's a good point.
Right, and because those people are not in newsrooms,
are more represented on Twitter.
Exactly, and whether they're represented to the whole world or with each other, kind of doesn't matter.
Right,
and I was just going to say to build on that, like you can follow those people, like it gives them an extra resonance in the way, like anytime there's a tragedy, for example, someone will always, by the way, follow so and so. Let's say it's a hurricane. They're a meteorologist in the area, or if it's Black Lives Matter, they're an activist who is on the ground, who's been working in this community for, a decade. So there's when things happen, and I actually think this is hugely valuable. I do it to a lesser extent for, I follow weird spectrum policy wonks on Twitter that no one else follows because I want to understand what they're thinking. So, and then as a journalist, those voices can get a say in the mainstream media that they haven't before. So
it's where alternative conversations happen.
But they're not alternative. So I was going over this. So we have a Center for Community and Ethnic Media, and we're trying to think about the right name because community and ethnic aren't quite it. And I hope she won't mind. The head of it was emailing me today and talking about, it's using the word everybody. And to me, everybody.
No, it's not everybody either.
Mass.
Yeah.
Right. But I get what she's saying is now finally it can be everybody. It's also, so it's not alternatives. It's not new voices. These voices have always been there. Nobody could hear them because they didn't have the outlet. And social media gives them that, which is part of, well, I'll give it to that.
Except AOC, who says social media is a health risk.
A little bit of a hypocrisy there, since it made her.
I think, again, both things can be true. I think there are enough documented studies where we talk about where we see that being online all the time, interacting with people, especially once you rise to prominence, especially as a woman, it is a health risk. You can only have so many people telling you constantly how crappy you are. That's going to affect you.
That's the difference between Stacey Twitter and Leo Twitter, by the way. You have nice people talking to you on Twitter.
I mean, I've had to block a couple of
I don't people, get as yeah. much hate as AOC does, obviously.
Oh,
but
no,
you can
obviously.
Clearly see why somebody like AOC, somebody who is a public figure and also a hotspot, is going to say, oh, this is not good. And yet, your argument, Jeff, is really important here. It is a chance for underrepresented voices to speak to her. So there's got to be a middle ground here.
Yes. And this goes back to the online harms thing in the UK. They would say in the bourgeois internet that Facebook should kill all the bad things. But I don't want them in that role particularly.
No, they should not be the arbiter of good and bad.
Well, that's what the UK is telling them they should be.
I know. I agree.
Literally, legal but harmful goes.
Yeah. No, that's so bad.
It's awful.
Well, what if the problem is they don't give you the tools to mediate your own experience in a way that you can walk away from
that's
a conversation.
That's why we like Google Plus, because you could very easily do that.
And if we could come up with a technical... da, da, da.
This is that thing that the guy who doesn't like podcasts hates, by the way. Just
Yeah. Everything we do, Leo, he hates.
Whistling. Especially whistling.
But actually having, not legislating what they can and cannot do, but legislating or having the capability and technical acumen to say, here's the sorts of rules that you should implement to give users the tools. Now, one could say that in a capitalistic system, that wouldn't be necessary because you would just go to a platform where you aren't attacked, which then gets to maybe we should be looking at, you know, data gathering and network effects as part of our competition policy. This is one of those things where I'm like, I don't know. That's possible.
Doesn't Twitter have enough tools for you to, you can block keywords, right? You can block people.
But the problem is they're still talking about you.
Yeah, they're still.
Oh, you're just blocking it from you.
Yeah, which.
Yeah, but you know what? There should not be a tool for somebody like AOC to say, oh, nobody can say anything bad about me in public. That's not. She's a member of Congress.
That's right.
But that's not the sort of thing that they would be doing. It's policing violent speech. It's policing.
Well, they should. Okay.
Insightful.
And there are laws against that. Stuff. So they should. Clearly, they should be doing that. Twitter says they are accepting cases where they leave the tweet up so law enforcement can act, which makes no sense to me at all, since they have a record.
Just document that.
Just document. Print it. Make a printout and send it to the cops. You don't have to leave it up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
This is, but this is also where I go back to, and we're not going to go through it again, but the proposal that I wrote about, I think 2 weeks ago, about the internet court. If it is illegal, then courts should rule, and you deal with it that way.
Yes.
If it's merely bad, then you go to Stacey's point. What's the quality of the experience? What tools are you giving people? What's the warranty you're giving people about how they can protect themselves and deal with themselves?
Yeah.
And what's possible?
Well, for instance, some of the heat I get on Twitter is legitimate or illegitimate, but criticism of performance on the shows or the shows themselves. I don't, it might hurt my feelings. I don't like it. But that kind of thing is not problematic in any real way. It just hurts my feelings. And the problem is from a personal point of view, humans are a bad judge of whether this is damaging, threatening, or just insulting. And,
missing a huge class, or maybe you're willfully ignoring a huge class of comments directed I mean, I'm sure they're directed towards men a lot, but they're that are directed towards women that are not just, I disagree with your opinion.
Oh, I know about those because I have a wife who's on in public, and I am very well aware of those. And many of our female staffers and female contributors, I have seen, you know, the worst of humanity attacking them. And it's far worse for them than it is for me. In fact, I'd never have anything anywhere near that bad.
And I wonder, so one of the, if you think about it as a public square problem, right? And if I think about my ability to walk outside and hang out in Austin, for example, and not have people walk up to me and yell hateful stuff at me, you know, is that protected by law? I probably could ask.
No, it's actually not.
Right? So I could ask someone, like a cop, and they'd probably be like, dude, stop harassing that lady. Just stop. Go do
but it's
thing,
not.
Right?
It's probably not illegal.
Or it's other. Stacy, here's what would happen.
So
other good
on,
people would can, come up and tell him to shut up.
One would hope. But can you imagine the kind of invective that Alexandria Ocasio Cortez faces in public?
I'm not done with my.
Okay, go ahead.
But what's okay in Austin? Let's say you know people running around topless. You know, we had Leslie, the naked guy. He would just run around either naked or in a bikini, right? In Austin, that's totally okay. In rural Kansas, that would be not okay.
Right.
And part of the problem here is we have these platforms that are international, and they're trying to cover social mores for so many different communities that they really can't. And the tools have to be flexible. But you're also going to run into people from Kansas who are seeing people from Austin and get offended. And I'm not talking about hate speech. I'm just talking about people getting offended by things on these platforms.
This is why it's hard.
Yes.
But Stacey, okay, let me go back to what I interrupted you, and I apologize. I was trying to agree with you. But if you do that on the street, right, and let's say it's a crowded street, one would hope Austin being a nice place. If somebody walks up to you and just starts saying horrible things, then forget the cop. That other people would say, hey, man, cool, chill, relax. Would you let the lady be alone? That's what we need in public. That's what we need online, too. And we see too little of that. We don't see anyone reacting to the bad behavior. Because part of it is we say, don't feed the troll, which is a proper tactic. Yeah. But the other part of it is that I think we too often send people, hey, look, they're yelling at Stacey. Ah! Right? And we encourage the behavior. How do we get our norms recalibrated for all of us to have a responsibility for bad behavior?
I think some of it people just don't see. Like, I know that for a while there was a movement, you know, to retweet some of your hateful things. So people are like, holy cow. And there's also, you know, I don't actually want someone. Sometimes people defend me on Twitter and I'm like, oh, let's just, you know, ignore them. So I think it is hard to, I mean.
Good point.
To say you can't read the situation as well as you can online as you can in like a street, if that also makes sense.
Though, but I do think in general, I rarely see people coming to the defense of someone. I rarely see someone shaming somebody for just bad behavior. I mean, I try to do it, but I come off like a nanny. But yeah.
How about Sri Lanka? Let's bring in Sri Lanka into this because horrific bombings in Sri Lanka and hundreds dead. Very sad. One of the topics that came up, though, on Twitter on Sunday was the fact that the government in Sri Lanka shut down social media shortly thereafter, saying it's problematic, it's inciting violence. And I, at the time, twisted it to serve my anti-Facebook Techno Valley politics.
I knew you would!
And I'm quoting from a tweet. By Yuhadjana, I can't pronounce it.
This is a great thread. This is a killer.
For the love of whatever you hold holy, right? Stop twisting this incident to serve your anti-Facebook Techno Valley politics. Right now, in a country with tight government controls on traditional media, social media is a boon for us. To make an effort to understand violence in Sri Lanka began before social media, internet, telephony. To a large extent, much of race hatred is still fueled by print media in this country. You want to point fingers, at least do your research into a complex history. Take a look at statements by local politicians. See how they are reacting. Look, this is too much work for American journalists, but okay. Look up the patterns of violence around elections, race issues, politics. Leave your biases and baggage at the door. Keep in mind that some of the voices you hear, you will hear pontificating, are not from, what is hashtag IKEA?
It was the where the bombing was, I think.
Okay, and have not been for decades, and understand the zeitgeist about as much as my cat understands Twitter. Look for local journalists on the hashtag LKA tag. Sri Lanka, I don't know. Anyway, whether you like it or not, the overwhelming mind share your platforms have enabled you to set the global narrative around Sri Lanka. Do your job, be responsible. So what he's saying is, in fact, social media is the truth teller in this case, not the mainstream media in Sri Lanka.
And a way that another thread, which I think I put in right above there on the rundown, said it's also a way you can find your family. There's a lot here that, again, goes to the people who are not in power, who have a communication. Do bad things happen there? Yes. Do the bad guys use it? But the truth is, you close social media, the bad guys are going to plenty of platforms and means they have.
Yeah,
it's the victims who don't have a means anymore.
Yeah, so that is really important and interesting point, and highlights how hard it is to judge this stuff because of cultural assumptions, whether it's Austin versus Kansas or the U.S. versus Sri Lanka.
Is Kara Swisher jumped on to her, she had a New York Times column and jumped in quickly to say that, you know, her first reaction was she was happy about this. And a lot of people sent her a lot, including Rasmus Kleist Nielsen at the Oxford Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism, you know, got researchers out who were talking about what the research is and what happens when you shut down these kinds of networks. It doesn't, but according to the research thus far, it doesn't end the violence. And so we've got to deal with the reality and evidence of what's really happening rather than these emotional responses.
Is it still shut down?
I don't know. I was wondering that myself.
Yeah. So if it were, that would confirm this, which is basically it's the government saying we want to tightly control the story, probably in our favor, as opposed to let original and honest voices come out. See, in the United States, it's usually, well, at least we hope, we feel like it's the opposite, that social media is where amplification occurs for all the, you know, weird dystopian and violent.
We just in the media tend to focus on those things. I mean, again, you see some really good things, Black Lives Matter,
well, like
Me Too,
this,
all of that.
Like this tweet.
That.
Like,
yeah.
This is very informative. This is hugely valuable. It's good. It's great. You know. So that is the value of Twitter. So there you go.
Wait a second. Did I just hear you say that is the value of
Twitter? Well, it's
Twitter?
One of the values of Twitter, and I never disagreed with that. It is the chance for all voices to be heard, just as the internet is, just as podcasting is, just as YouTube is. But we can't ignore the, you know, baleful.
But even there, Leo, you know, again, as well as the banal. You're a celebrity, and Stacey, you're a female celebrity, and so that has an impact. But my Facebook feed is fine. There's nothing bad in it. Nothing.
Yeah, except did you read this thing that Facebook did?
Okay, well, now you're going to a bit of a non sequitur here. You're going to complain about Facebook, which is fine.
I'm complaining about the company.
Feed.
I'm not complaining about the feed.
And that's fine. That's a different thing.
But remember that the feed,
your system.
The feed is managed by this company that is clearly immoral. So that's
full
my
disclosure.
Problem.
I raised money for my school from Facebook. I'm independent
of
Facebook.
I don't think you're defending
money personally.
Facebook for that reason.
No, I'm not. But I'm just going to let full disclosure before we get into it.
Facebook unintentionally, they say, uploaded email contacts of 1.5 million new Facebook users since May 2016. It turns out that when some people were joining Facebook, it was asking users to enter their email, not email address, email passwords to verify their identities.
That's ridiculous.
That's
they ever
ridiculous.
Actually did that?
Yes, for millions of people. Furthermore, so first of all, a normal site says, is this your email? And then sends you an email and says, click to confirm.
Yeah.
That would be sufficient. You control this email address. Facebook asked for email addresses and passwords to verify. What they did was logged in and imported all your contacts without telling you. Facebook disclosed on Wednesday to Business Insider that 1.5 million people's contacts were collected this way, fed into Facebook systems, where they were used to improve Facebook's ad targeting. Yeah, maybe. Build Facebook's web of social connections. Definitely. And, oh yeah, recommend friends to add.
Yep, that's how they got those creepy things about your therapist and everybody else showing up on Facebook.
We now know, yeah. We now know.
And it was exactly what everyone's worst case scenario was, suspected. I mean, that's...
And you cannot... Facebook, screw up. This is not unintentional. There's wait a minute. How do you unintentionally ask for a password, log in, download the content?
No, I agree.
I was like, no, that's a feature. So, you actually specifically had to build that.
Yeah, you built it. Somebody coded that and improved it, and it got into the code base. So my point is that, yeah, your feed might be fine, but the company that controls what you see in that feed does stuff like that.
Facebook does surprises me. I mean, maybe I would be surprised.
Screw up too often.
That's not a screw up. That is.
That's an intention.
And by the way, I recently created a new Instagram account. Please don't ask to follow me. It's private and you will not be allowed.
Can I get in?
No. For one reason, Lisa said, look, I post all of our vacation pictures on Instagram.
Right.
Create an account. Follow me. I only follow her and you will be able to see them. That made sense. I cannot tell you how many times I've lost count, how many times that Instagram account has asked for my contact list again and again and again and again and again. And it continues to do so.
Growth hacking.
It's growth hacking. But honestly, please do not forget that when I give my contact list to a company, I am not selling myself out. I'm selling every single person I know out, their name, their address, their phone number, their address. I am giving that to Facebook, every single one of them. I have 4,000 contacts. I would be giving every one of those 4,000 people personal information, your personal information, Stacey, yours, Jeff, to Facebook.
You bet they
ask for that again and again and again and again. And they pretend that it's just so we can tell you when your friend joins Instagram.
Truth is, they already have it.
I'm so surprised that I very early in my journalism career, my publisher actually. So as a journalist, I have all my sources and contacts, right? It's a pretty great list, right? And our publisher really wanted it because they wanted to spam our contacts with ads or ad pitches, basically buy from us. And so she went into our shared server, so our Microsoft Exchange server, I think it was, and was trying to pull our contact. Yes.
Oh my God! I hope she was fired.
She thought this was awesome. So we actually had to pull all of our contacts off that and had to keep our contacts completely separately. And to me, it is such. And this was in 2000, right? So it is so weird to me how much that mindset has shifted for people, because not just as a journalist, but again, like you said, it's your friends, it's your family. Why would you sell them out? Especially if they, don't want you to share that. So yeah, it's nuts. I never tried to do that.
What has evolved in our understanding of this is you used to be they want it for a mailing list. That's valuable. You could sell those names. It's not about a mailing list. It's about building something so much more sophisticated, a social graph, friends of friends. Facebook really deeply understood this early on. They understood how valuable a social graph was.
Well, getting your email password is phishing.
Oh, I would hope.
I would hope that
people faced with that would say no, but.
No, right.
People do, because they're innocent people. They don't know this. They're our friends and family. They're not geeks. If you and I were asked for a password from Facebook, we wouldn't give it to them.
We'd talk about it for an hour on the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd warn people off in your radio show.
We should make the point. It wasn't universal on Facebook. Maybe it was a pilot program. Maybe they were just, I don't know. I mean, I don't. It wasn't something everybody.
That's the problem with so much of this at all the platforms. Is there's a back to the early days. There's a very low tolerance for it. It was just a test.
Yeah, move fast.
And it doesn't represent policy. We were just trying something out.
Yeah.
You can't use that excuse anymore because what you're doing is going to be seen, and it speaks for you as a company. But that's so historic in the way these cultures work.
Yeah. And it was, I had real trepidation about creating an Instagram account because I don't want to give Facebook any information. And just the fact that I have that Instagram on my phone is, I know, giving them a lot of information because there's location information. There's all sorts of information that is now leaking out to Facebook. It's good. We've become aware of that. We are now a little bit more at choice about how we do that. And of course, we've talked about it, not on this show before, but about the Journal of American Medical Association, the article they published. They got 36 apps, mental health. They searched for them with two keywords, smoking cessation and depression. They got 36 mental health and smoking cessation apps. Of the 36, 33 sent information from those apps to other third parties.
How did they, I couldn't figure out from the story, that they could do that, or they didn't warn that they wouldn't do that. How did they know that they did do that?
You put you put something like Wireshark on the actual network feed, and you can see the outbound traffic. It's a simple device, you know, like a pineapple that you put on the Wi-Fi, and you can.
Well, but it's outbound to their server. How do you know it's then outbound in turn?
Wasn't always to other their parties. Server. That's part of the problem.
Well, wait. I'm not trying to defend anybody here. I'm just trying to understand. If I'm using an app that tracks my progress, clearly it's remembering me and my progress. It is going to the server. It is not just staying on my phone.
Yeah, so, but it may be going to another
how
server.
How do they know? How did the authors of the JAMA piece know that the company then sent that to other parties?
Well, they wouldn't know
that.
What I'm saying.
Hold on, Jeff.
The story headline should be, could do this, but they don't know that they did do this is what I couldn't find out from the story.
Big difference. So if you run something like Wireshark or anything that shows where your traffic goes, what happens is some bits go to like a Facebook server or whoever server, and then some will go to like an ad traffic or a third party server. So you can see all of that. It's not just one giant stream of traffic that's, you know.
Yeah, but of course there's ad servers. That's no surprise. Listen, I think there should be rules about anything that has this kind of personal information. I'm not arguing with that at all. But the journalism in the story, the headlines on some of them said did do this, and others said could do this. Big difference. And so what the actual policy and actions of the company are, and the fact that they didn't tell people that they had the data or didn't warn them, all that, yes, fix that. I'm not arguing with any of that. But I'm just trying to question the conclusions of the story and how they reported this. I'm not sure that I get how they could have.
Well, you're right. You cannot tell if the company, if the data is sent to the... First of all, it's probably the case that information about substance abuse, you know, measurements like that, it's probably the case they shouldn't be sent to the company at all, especially if the privacy policy doesn't say it's going to be. You can see if it's sent to a third party directly, which apparently in some cases it was, but you can't tell.
But if that third party was an ad server, that's just the way the web operates.
Maybe it's an ad server, but why would they send the ad server what I ate yesterday?
Right. They're like, what data is getting sent there?
Again, we just need to know more about this. But I agree with the basic premise of this. Is that when it comes to especially matters of health and mental?
Well, and the other problem is
there should be standards here.
Yeah,
that are
they found several enforced. Cases where the apps lied about their privacy policy. Other cases where they weren't.
Right. That's all bad.
Yeah, and this is in JAMA because the American Medical Association, because this is aimed at care providers, physicians.
They don't know this. Oh, you guys, this happened to me. So I actually had a conversation with my daughter's pediatrician. So I went to their office and they were using a service. Oh gosh, what was it called? I'll have to look it up. But they were using a service and to check in basically. And at first I was excited because I always hate filling out the paperwork, and every year you have to fill out the same paperwork and you're like, God, if this were online, you would just have this data and I'd change it if it changed. But it was this service, and as I was clicking through the end and the HIPAA compliance and all this, I came to a page that told me that my data on this particular form, which did ask for, like, my daughter's, like, is she experiencing neurological things or these kind of things, that it would be shared with both the company providing the service and its third-party advertisers and
Isn't that a violation of HIPAA?
No, because it's not actually her medical information, apparently. It's just me filling out symptoms for my doctor. So it's not my doctor's data. It's me saying to my doctor what's wrong with her why we were there. So I talked to my doctor about this because I refused to sign that part. But, you know, I'd already filled in everything, right? And the physician was like, the doctor's admins were like, this is our check-in process now. This is the process. And so when I showed it to her, she's like, yeah, we'll just decline that. And I'm like,
oh boy, I bet nobody does that.
So I declined it. Yeah, nobody does. I mean, kids were filling this out. They were on a tablet. It was exciting. And then I think it was Phreesia, maybe was the name of the company. And then I talked to the doctor and she's like, I was like, look, it's not cool that you force your patients to give up this data. And she's using it because she's using it because she didn't realize that was the case. And she it's a discount for her. Like, it's cheaper and easier for her.
Oh, gee. Why they gave her a discount.
Right. Well, but
that's shocking.
I like our pediatrician. Oh, no. She is a lovely person.
She's a good
but
person.
And this is scary. And it's frustrating. And when you are a patient, for example, what were we there for? I don't remember. We were there for something. But you usually, when you go to the doctor, you're sick and you need, or it's an appointment.
You're a little bit vulnerable.
Yes.
You're going to fall for this.
You've got like no appointments for the next 6 weeks. So it's not like you can say, hey, I'm not going to sign this. I refuse this.
Right.
They're going to be like, well, we can't see you. And then you're like, I'll just take my tumor and go home. I mean,
you should be very suspicious anytime you're filling something out on a tablet, not a piece of paper. That immediately raises my suspicion.
Well,
it's Phreesia. It's Phreesia.
So we don't ask for when we do Envoy. They don't ask for any personal information. I'm just going. They don't ask for symptoms. So let me point you, Jeff, to the actual article on the JAMA Network.
On JAMA, okay, good. Thank you, because I couldn't.
Data transmission to one or more third parties was identified for 33 of the 36 apps. You can always tell third party because it's a different.
Okay, but the third party could be.
Well, they talk about this. They say Google Advertising Services, Facebook, Google. They talk about where it went. Almost half the apps transmitted data to a third party, but lacked a privacy policy. 9 apps failed to disclose this transmission in policy text. 5 apps, or explicitly, this is the worst, stated the transmission would not occur. 3 apps. 81% transmitted data to analytics and advertising or marketing services operated by Google and Facebook.
Here's the next question, Leo. What data? Right, the fact that this user is on this app and you can send them an ad, the ad's there. It's obvious. That's how it works.
Well, but sending information about my depression.
No, it matters greatly as to what the data is. Presence on the app and there's an ad there? Yeah, it's going to be sent to an ad server. Question is, did it send other data in use in another way? That matters. That's all I'm saying.
No,
they may have done bad things, but I want to know the details.
If you are on a site or on an app that's for depression sufferers, for example, and that data, the fact that you're on that app is damning in and of itself, you know, even the information there is damning. So just the fact,
right.
It's like
Stacey, I don't disagree, but if you're on an abortion clinic. If you're on an ad-supported site for depression,
that's an app.
The ad has to come from a third party.
It's an app. And the challenge here is doctors are not being given this information about how these things are sharing data. And so they will tell their patients, hey, use this app to help manage your depression. And a patient thinking the doctor knows will say, okay. And then their depression has been outed to Google or Facebook.
I absolutely agree for the need for standards here. I agree that stuff can be bad. What I'm questioning is very narrow here is the specific reporting in JAMA. What data?
I'm about to give you the answer. I'm giving you the answer.
That's what I'm asking.
So the conclusion of it is users should be aware their use of ostensibly standalone mental health apps and the health status this implies may be linked to other data for other purposes, such as marketing, targeting mental illness. Critically, this may take place even if an app provides no visible clues like a Facebook login, and even for users who do not have a Facebook account. This study was not designed to answer your question. It was not designed to identify whether linkable information was actually being used by advertisers, for example, to subsequently drive tailored advertising. Future work could consider looking for direct evidence of linkable information being used in this way by looking for changes in advertisement content suggesting
that's critical. And all the headlines that then came out of this story jumped right to, I'm going to say it, the moral panic line of saying, oh my God, all these places are telling the whole world that you're nuts.
Well, I think it is a completely appropriate warning to health providers and people who might want to use these apps.
I agree with that. But the journalism here, especially in those that rewrote it, is shoddy.
I would say you do headlines. Everyone does this. Headlines are designed to get people to read the story.
That's a scare headline. That is a scare.
Data has not become a scare word. Selling your data.
No. Selling your data. Well, no, if it has an add-on. But that's a scare headline.
It's a scare headline. It's a scary word. But you know what?
Light shared on you? That's a good headline. That's a good headline.
That mental health app might share your data without telling you.
That's a good headline.
That's
I'm
accurate.
Fine with
that's
that.
The Verge, I think. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
The Times.
I'm making a very narrow point here, but this is how these things get stretched. And this is how we end up with the UK online harms report wanting to ban speech. That's what scares me. Should there be standards here? Absolutely. Are places doing some things wrong? Absolutely.
Well, I think the other conclusion is that these privacy policies lie and are not being, there's no enforcement going on to make sure that they are accurate.
There's that FTC fine that just happened against Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's being enforced, but clearly on these apps, I mean, ain't nobody got time to read all those privacy policies and see if they're accurate. You think the FTC is doing studies like this? I don't think so.
No, I think that the JAMA is quite right to look at this and to lobby to have standards in anything matter around health.
I don't think this Washington Post headline is inaccurate. Smoking and depression apps are selling your data to Google and Facebook, study finds.
Wait, that's accurate. There's two problems with the headline. No, there's two problems with the headline. Number one, they're not necessarily selling the data per se. They are putting an ad avail in there. The way every damn site on the entire an app in the internet works. Number two is the implication of that is they are selling data about your depression and your smoking to that, and they do not have the data to back that up. It's a matter of journalism. That's all I'm saying. Now you can.
Well, they have the data to back that up. They're saying this person's on a depression site. Or are you saying specifically just because I'm on a depression site, I might not be depressed?
The way the stories were written in turn was that they're sharing your progress against this. They're sharing details. Right. From where you are
so
in
that's,
your progress.
And JAMA admits that. That would be a fertile ground for the next study, which is to see if it changes the ads you get.
Fine.
Okay.
What do you think?
Remember my story.
What do you think? What do you think the answer will be, Jeff? Do you think it'll change the
remember
ads
my story.
What do you remember think? I was curious. What do you think the answer would be?
Remember my story about how...
Could you say with some certainty? No, it's not going to affect the ads that you went to a depression site. No, it's not going to affect your ads.
Here's Leo. Can I answer? You also could jump to a conclusion there. Remember, I talked to a journalist who talked on Facebook about falling down a lot, and he got an ad for multiple sclerosis and thus found out that's how he found out he had MS, right? And so the fact that someone is targeting a word doesn't mean that Facebook said, hey, we got one here, MS patient, give him an ad, right? Didn't happen that way. There are triggers and keywords that are bought and that have implications. I agree with you guys, have implications, but the simplistic nature of that headline is misleading. It's
all right. Well, folks, if you want to get diagnosed for depression, make sure you download and use a depression app, and that way your Facebook ads will offer you antidepressants.
Well, here's the other problem. This is
and
like
that's a good benefit.
Because the problem is, a lot of people are getting a lot of benefit out of a lot of these apps.
No, I think that's
sad. Leo, I know people who are getting benefit out of these apps.
Yeah.
And so if they are misused, that makes it a triple sin. I'm agreeing.
Yes.
don't go to the point of saying never use these apps.
No, I'm not saying that.
Because people can get benefit.
We ought to make sure that these apps deal honestly with their users.
I've agreed 100 times.
Yeah.
And Stacey, you're not going to blame me on your migraine you're getting right now, nor on the fact that we just told the world that you get them. And not my fault.
I already know that you told the world because I got a bunch of tweets from people saying, hey, sorry you weren't on Twig because of the migraines. No, I think it's the headset. It's kind of pushing a lot.
We got to get you a better headset.
No, I just think it's the yelling in the headset. I'll be honest.
Did you pack your stuff or you pack your nice thing, your microphone?
Yeah, my fancy mic. Well, I don't have. I'm in like a 2-bedroom apartment. I'm working at a kitchen table right now. So
nice.
Did you store a bunch of stuff?
Mirrors.
Wow. Oh, that's nice. Look at that. That looks nice.
Did you store?
I did store a bunch of stuff. Yes. Yes.
That to separate your stuff.
We should mention that fine has not been applied yet, but this comes from Facebook's quarterly results, which came out today. The company has set aside $3 billion related to the FTC's investigation. They're predicting it could be a fine ranging from $3 to $5 billion. And so they're putting the money in the savings account. They're putting it in a sock so that if the fine should come through. But again, Facebook stock, by the way, went up 10% in after hours trading. So clearly everything else in the quarterly result was positive. There's good money in those depression apps.
They did say that Portal, your favorite device, Leo, is quote unquote very valuable to the company.
Really? They're making a lot of money on that.
Really?
No, they just said it was very valuable.
Wow, that's interesting. Oh, I see. I have two. I'd be glad to sell anybody. I'd like to make them more valuable to me.
Did you try to give one to your mother?
Not yet. Actually, Burke asked if he could take one apart. I said, be my guest. So Burke's going to do something with one.
You'll get a story out of it one day. Hey, see what data Facebook is gathering from that.
Oh, you know, we could put Wireshark on it. That's an interesting idea. Yeah. All right, let's do the change log and then we can go home. How about that? This is why podcasts suck.
The Google change log.
Carson, I think that was hostile. You should walk out now. See how he does. See how well he does.
And I deserve that completely. And Leo was right.
We give Carson lots of props. He is a great producer. I couldn't be happier. We've had a string of great producers, and I know you guys, especially Jeff, has loved our producers. Starting with Eileen, remember, and Chad, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Where is Chad now?
Chad moved back to Austin, I think, or maybe it's Houston. It's something with a stun in it. And he is doing the GizWiz podcast with Dick DiBartolo every week. And he's still a great YouTuber making money on his Minecraft videos, as far as I know.
Chad.
Yeah.
I love Chad.
Yeah. Facebook dropped the price on the portal.
Of course.
And then who was before Carson? I'm forgetting a whole bunch of people in the middle.
There you are.
Jason.
You just go through them.
Jason Howell. And Jason Kleanthis, F and Dunn, of course. So we've had quite a few very, very good producers.
Before Eileen was, what's his name?
Before Eileen, was there some Dane?
Dane.
Do you go back to the Dane era?
I go back to Dane, yeah.
Dane actually was the one who said we should do a podcast about Google.
God bless you, Dane.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dane.
So the Google changelog, you can now get Google Fit on your Apple device on iOS. Competing with Apple Health, I guess.
Here's the latest news.
Shoot. I actually triggered my... I should... yeah, Google Fit now on iOS. I like Google Fit. It's really good. It's not... I don't know if it's better than Apple's Health app, and Apple's Health app ties into a lot of other hardware on your... through your iPhone, including your Apple Watch, although Google Fit will work with the Apple Watch too, which is kind of nice. Google Assistant speakers are now getting free YouTube music streaming. It's ad-supported, but that's nice. That's very nice. Google Maps has added EV chargers. So if you drive an electric vehicle, you can look at the map and find your next charge.
Can I ask you a question, Leo?
Yes.
So if you don't have a Tesla,
yes.
If you have a
I feel
other
for
brand,
you, yes.
You can't use Tesla charging
chargers. No. The superchargers are only for Teslas, and Teslas even have a different connector.
Can a Tesla, in turn, can't use others?
Teslas come with adapters so that you can't
use
them.
They have an adapter,
I forgot. Stacey, I can ask you that, too. I forgot.
We're both Teslas. You're the only one
ahead of me, yes.
Here's my question. Given all the stuff Elon has said about the new self-driving capabilities of the next-generation Teslas, any Tesla you buy from now on will have that new chip and...
You want to talk about something scary?
Are you going to talk about the part where he says, and there's a setting where you, if you don't mind a few fender benders, you could turn it to aggressive mode? That one?
That. and how he scary. Doesn't trust LiDAR.
That's my driving style.
Yeah, he doesn't like LiDAR. Would you
He's
turn on the
LiDAR.
Aggressive mode? He
Would
says
I, no,
you could
I
do it all with cameras, radar, as we do. So
he said that forever, though.
Yeah. He's a good salesman. He sells the capabilities. So I'm on the cusp of deciding, should I get another Tesla or should I get another?
Well, I was about to ask you what your thinking was. Last time you said no, done.
Yeah, now I'm thinking maybe Elon is a good salesman. Maybe I should.
Well, so this gets to, would you lease it or would you buy it? Because I don't feel like, you should not buy any new car.
Yeah.
I feel like you should always lease cars.
As long as we lease it through Twit. So as long as it's... as I have a company, I will do my car executive vehicle through the company. So I'm interested in the Audi electric. I drove the Jaguar I-Pace. I wasn't that crazy about it. I don't know. The Model 3 is pretty cool. He also says the next generation Model 3 won't have a steering wheel. I do not want a car that does not have a steering wheel. Not
yet.
Oh,
Jesus.
No, not yet. I'm not ready for that. Continuing with the Google changelog, Wing, which is Google's drone delivery service, is the first to get FAA approval. Pretty exciting. Wing now has the same certifications that smaller airlines get from the FAA. It plans to begin routine deliveries of small consumer items in two rural communities in Virginia, where there are apparently no sidewalks, within months.
So we are the only journalism school in New York that teaches drone reporting.
Oh, wow.
My colleague Travis Fox, and I saw him going out the other day with this huge case he has, and the students going to where they do this. And I didn't realize this. He has on a gilet jaune, the yellow jacket.
Yeah.
And it's required by law. I don't know. On the back it has to say it's FAA licensed drone
operator,
pilot, so you can say,
really?
Who is that bozo doing that?
Wow.
And you can find I didn't know that.
Yeah. I do know that you're not supposed to fly over people, and that's why Wing has to operate in a rural area of Virginia, because, you know, you can't operate over crowds, which makes
sense. Well, it might make more sense anyway, because your density,
right,
your population density is...
Right.
Makes it harder to deliver.
FAA required Wing to create extensive manuals, training routines, and a safety hierarchy, just like any air carrier. So it's interesting, but I don't think it's going to bring drone deliveries to a home near you yet.
Damn.
Do you wish to step into Childish Gambino's world?
No.
There is a Childish Gambino avatar in Playground. But this is even more. You can go through an AR portal to explore an augmented cave where you can find and interact with hidden glyphs while still being able to see out into the real world, which is helpful in not getting run over. It's an AR app called Pharos AR. And I will get it, and I will report back. Pharos AR. I'm much more excited about playing the Harry Potter Wizards Unite game in augmented reality, where you can actually catch a wizard in the studio.
There's still nothing happening in it, though.
Carson sideloaded it because it's available in New Zealand. Next will be Australia. That means they're getting close, I would think. Google is testing a distraction-free reader mode in Chrome Canary. That means it may be coming to Chrome soon. Nobody likes to be bombarded with ads, says Google. and general clutter when reading articles on the web. So reader mode. For years, we thought that Google, an advertising company, would never sign off on such a feature. Who's writing this? Thankfully, it looks like we underestimated. Oh, I see. This is the reader mode version of Scott Scriven's article from Android Police. Nice. You select distill page from the menu. You can apparently turn it on other versions of the browser. So you have to hashtag enable dash reader dash mode. That's the flag. So go into Chrome flags and look for reader mode. Enable it. Safari has this. It's a really nice feature. I like it. Apple does it on its browsers. It's surprising, though, to think Chrome might have it. And finally, it's easier to find work-from-home jobs in Google Search. This is I didn't know there were job search features in Google Search.
Yeah, you can find jobs there. And what's interesting is that this uses schema.org, is something in my world of news that people are using a lot to try to put data, metadata on. And Google's using schema.org stuff a lot. So job sites that in their schema.org structure label work-from-home jobs, now in Search you can find
them. That's really neat.
Go annotation, la, 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 la.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, this is non-visible annotations to web pages.
Right.
Hidden in the schema. And if you do the Google search, say you search for customer service jobs, click location, there will be a bunch of tags you can choose, including work from home. I like it. And that's the Google Change Log. And now I do the thing that I do every week, which is to ask you, Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at CUNY.
Uh-oh.
And Stacey Higginbotham, stay-at-home mom. No, IoT expert and journalist.
What?
I mean, I do stay at home for part of the time.
All the time.
I do work. I am a mom.
I was just teasing you. But anyway, this is the time when I ask you if I've missed any stories that you would like to talk about.
Oh, that. Oh.
Then I'm
we have missed a ton of stories. However.
There's a lot. I know.
There's a lot, but I don't want to do any of them.
TikTok. Banned in India, now back in India.
I love TikTok.
TikTok's cool. I bet your daughter uses it, right?
She doesn't, but it's because she doesn't have a lot of friends on it, and she's actually very concerned about appearing on cameras.
Oh, good for her.
But
good for her.
We watch it a lot.
The issue in India was pornography. Do you see a lot of porno on TikTok?
My daughter and I do not.
No.
But we're mostly...
You follow. It's another case of it's who you follow, right?
I guess. I'm like...
I didn't even know.
She drives that. Well, of course, there's porn everywhere, Leo.
You can't get away from it. That's right. Men.
Men.
Anything I missed that you wanted to talk about, Jeffrey?
No, I'm not finding anything.
Okay, so let's get from Stacey.
Wait. The bottom.
How about you, Karsten?
The very last story.
Oh, yes. Actually, Stacey was all excited about this.
Oh, yeah.
They asked artificial intelligence to create a game. Listen to the games it created first, and then the game it finally did. First, it created a game in which an exploding frisbee relay race, racers run on a track while discs that explode on impact are thrown at them. I actually think that sounds like a great game, but maybe not for the runners. How about this? A hot air balloon-based sport where players balance on a line tethered between aircraft and pass balls back and forth. Again, loads of fun to watch, maybe not so much fun to play. How about pommel horse sawing? Two people sit on pommel horses on opposite sides of a giant log and rock back and forth with a saw. I've seen that at the lumberjack games. That is a game.
Well, this also goes to there is, what is it, in Sweden? I saw this girls on hobby horses.
Oh, the New York Times did the hobby horse thing, but that's not a game.
Yeah.
That's just something.
I know, but I'm just seeing a convergence here.
Yeah.
Depends on what an annual hobby horse championship.
That probably the AI was fed
at
that.
At a saw.
Yeah, at a saw. Make it fun. Apparently a lot of the AIs at least didn't think its peril is fun. Maybe they're getting that from what they ingest. I don't know. An underwater relay race?
Look at football.
Yeah.
That damages people. Baseball has really fast flying objects that if they hit you, it hurts.
So the one they implemented actually does sound cool. A form of rugby with obstacles that require gymnastic style maneuvers to avoid. Here it is. It's kind of like parkour meets rugby. And you said that you thought this looked like, wait a minute, there's a drone? Oh, no, that's just.
This doesn't require the gymnastics.
Oh, this is a different one. This is Speedgate. Yeah.
Speedgate is the one they came up with that was actually viable and people could actually play.
Looks like Quidditch, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's not super Quidditchy. Okay. You have to get your stuff in the center gate before you can unlock points at the other gate. Oh. So your first move is that, and then there's rules about.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat variation.
You got to guard the gate and guard the goal. Yeah.
Right, and then you can't go into the gate. And, I don't know. There's a ball. Ooh. There's running. All good sports involve running.
I would be very bad at it. Whatever it is, I would be bad at it.
So their goal is to get to the point where you'll hear somebody say, "Oh yeah, Speed Gate. My kids play that."
Yeah.
It could happen. I mean, it looks like a fun game.
Oregon Sports Authority has recognized Speed Gate as an official sport in the state of Oregon.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, if we can play Ultimate Frisbee, we can certainly play Speed Gate.
I'm excited. So this was an effort of whom?
I think it was NVIDIA.
Okay.
Or is it NVIDIA marketing it? I couldn't tell.
Yeah. It's a design firm. AKQA. I bet they were engaged by NVIDIA or something along those lines. NVIDIA does a lot of artificial intelligence and machine learning stuff. They make the chips that do it. So that's cool. Stacey, do you have a thing this week?
So I have two because I forgot that you guys probably would like this one more. So I'll tell you about this one. This is IoT Inspector, which did you guys talk about this while I was gone?
I made it my pick of the week on MacBreak Weekly last week. I think this is, I'm really glad that you... You talked about this. It's not available for anything but Macs yet, but they're going to do they'll do something eventually.
Yes. So I actually had one of the co-creators of it on the show.
Oh, neat.
Some things to know about it. What it does is, I've got another pick. I've had a backup.
No. I want to know because you know more about it than I did. I installed it on my Mac.
Oh, okay, good. So yeah, this is a device. So you install it if you have a MacBook, you can install it, and it runs in the background. And what is it? It's doing traffic spoofing. So it sends everything that all the packets that your devices are sending. It's actually running those through your computer, so IoT can inspect it and then send it back out.
So the first thing you learn is all the devices you have phoning home.
You know all the devices on your network.
The second thing you learn is, are they encrypting this information? And many of them are not, by the way, in my house anyway.
Yeah, there's three options. Weak encryption, no encryption, and insecure.
Yeah.
So we talk about the differences there. It's not designed to run all the time, and you'll also see where your traffic is going, just like with Wireshark or something like
right.
that. So it's pretty handy. Like I noticed that like my Nest, for example, has, I can't remember if it was weak or insecure encryption.
Yes, mine does too. Yeah, I was surprised. That's a camera. I don't want that to have weak encryption.
Well, and he explains what the weak encryption is. So something with weak encryption is running an earlier version of TLS.
Right.
The insecure encryption is a little bit different.
1.0. God.
Oh, wait. Yes. Insecure is more like unknown because what it's using is using weak cipher suites and it's basically allowing it to connect with servers that use weak cipher suites.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it is. It's
available. Yeah, and right. I'm not surprised. That's a big issue on the net in general.
Right. So that's what that is. And yeah. Download it. See what you have. They're using this for research purposes. So you have to choose all of your devices you want to monitor. You have to opt in. So think about that as a very progressive policy about data sharing. You are sharing your data with them. So if you have sensitive data, you may not want to share it with them. And you can delete it, actually. So you can run all this, even your sensitive data, and delete it. And they'll just be like, smell you later.
It's Mac only for now, but they are working on Windows and Linux versions. I think this is really cool. And you have to sign a fairly extensive consent form because the information is being sent to Princeton.
But I think they're, I'm glad to know you talked to them, so they're trustworthy, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's like an IRB kind of thing for your data. It was kind of fun. You know, just for this research data.
Yeah.
So that's IoT Inspector. There's a link. It's a little wonky to set up. You don't want to run it all the time because it will wreak havoc on your network. So, you know, unless you're just up for that.
So here's the screen from their video, just so you can see what you're, what kind of thing you're going to get. You get all the devices. You get a lot about how the devices are working. It's a pretty cool. I was really
impressed. And they want you to label your stuff. So like I noticed some of the stuff was mislabeled, but you'll help them be able to identify different types of devices, different traffic patterns.
Yeah, and then you can actually look at the network activity coming out of the device, which is pretty interesting. What's your other pick?
Okay, this was before I remembered that I had an actual tech pick because. But this is a really good book if you have kids in your life who like who are geeks, who like Comic Cons, fan fiction, that sort of thing. This is a recently issued book. My 12-year-old daughter loves it. And I don't really know what else to say about it other than it seems like a fun book. She really enjoyed it. It appeared in her Easter basket.
It's called The Princess and the Fangirl, A Geekerella Fairy Tale. Once
I can't
upon
believe
a
I
con.
Forgot to say the name of the book.
By Ashley Poston. That's my job. Don't worry. Ashley Poston is the author.
Yes.
Neat.
So it's really good if you have a teenage girl, maybe a boy, I don't know. But I'm always on the lookout for things that are fun and not, you know, that are good for that age group that have
is it a sequel
messages.
To Geekerella?
You know, I don't know. I guess so, maybe.
The magic pumpkin is actually a vegan treats food truck. So,
oh yeah, it's a book too. Who knew?
Book two. You got more to read.
Now I can get her something else.
Jeff Jarvis, a number, my friend.
Let's go with this one. Google has saved over 6 million pounds of food waste in its cafes.
Wow.
In the last 5 years. And, you know, naturally a data-driven company, they're trying to find all ways to brag just like this, that they're being smart. So among the things they do, of course, is repurpose things, which any, you know, we see this happen. We used to go to a resort in the Poconos. We'd see, you know, tonight's dinner, we'd guess what it's going to be tomorrow at lunch. So the leftover risotto becomes arancini. Was that how you say it?
Uh-huh.
Arancini, yeah. Oh.
Okay.
The rice balls.
Yeah, they're so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I love those.
You know, bananas go into banana bread, obviously. They also try to reduce waste earlier up the stream. So I didn't know this. Coffee cherries. The fruit around the coffee bean is normally wasted, but they're making a flour out of that and experimenting with it in brownies, tortillas, and other foods.
Wow.
They avoid preparing too much food ahead of time. Near the end of the lunch, they might change to shallower pans at the salad bar to give an impression of abundance. It's all about fooling people. Obviously, we know that they went to smaller plates to get people to eat less some time ago. Doesn't fool me. Mm-mm. Take two of them, but smaller portions. And so 189 of Google's cafes in 26 countries, they use lean path systems to figure this out.
Nice.
There's one other number, which I just amused me, but the Boston Herald won't let me get to the story now because I already looked at it once. But a guy in Boston, it's Winklevi cubed, guy in Boston tried to get some money from the Winklevoss twins that they got from Zuckerberg, and the court just said no.
Oh, my. Oh, my, oh, my.
If you could have sued Zuckerberg, you would have sued Zuckerberg. Little joke there, a little reference to the movie.
You know, it's funny because I clicked one of your links and then I went to Boing Boing and then I found this. And I have to say, you know, my infatuation with Scottish accents.
Yeah.
For some reason, a couple of guys, Dylan Cassidy and Kelly Kraft, have redubbed the Don Bluth movie The Land Before Time with Scottish voices.
It's not your mom's fault. Now, just pay attention to old Hooter.
And I don't know why, but it just tickles me.
Nobody's fault. The great.
I'm sure it will be taken down pronto. So go get it while you can.
But what will I do? I miss her so much.
And you were always.
I'm hoping
that this will spawn a slew of Scottish remakes.
Scottish remakes, yes. What movies would you like to see done in Scottish?
Apart from each other. I think I'd want to see everything done.
Everything should be done in Scottish.
I think the Lion King.
Oh, the Lion King would be great. Ladies and gentlemen, basta. You have suffered through 2 hours and 22 minutes of the most discursive.
They both have headaches now.
Crazy podcast ever. This is why the Washington Post hates podcasts, and you survived it. Congratulations. I thank
Yay!
You. Yes, Stacey Higginbotham is awesome. You should listen to the Stacey on IoT podcast. It's an actual good podcast with content. She does it with Kevin Toefel. She also does a great newsletter at Stacey on IoT. Listen, watch, read, and I hope we see you again next week, Stacey. Thank you. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Glad the family's home. We also thank Jeff Jarvis, the director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, and former TV guide critic, for joining us today. BuzzMachine.com is his blog, at Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter. Stacey is at Giga Stacey on the Twitter. And I thank you both for being here. We do This Week
in Google.
Oh, it's such a great show. I love this show. And I admit to completely indulging myself, just having a good time with you guys. So I apologize. If you want to watch us do this live with all the good parts left in, go to twit.tv/live. We do it about 1:30 Pacific on Wednesdays, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can also, and I encourage you to, download copies. We have on-demand versions available of all of our shows at twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/twig, audio or video, depending on your consumption preference. You can also subscribe, which would probably be the best thing to do. That way you'd get it automatically. Every week. The minute it's ready, just in time for your Thursday morning commute. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.